Here we go.
They thought it was a 737 that went through the building.
Mm-hmm, but you, at this point, you cannot physically see any remnants of an airplane or anything such as that, can you not? Ed? Ed, are you still on the telephone with me?
You're listening to Fakeologist Audio, a periodic audio where I explore the world of media fakery. You can find my blog at fakeologist.com, where you'll find all the links to the live stream and audio archives. You'll also find links to my sub-blogs, forums, email, PayPal, Twitter, and YouTube. We now use Discord for all our interactive audio and text. To join in on any live conversation, go to our main page and connect to the Discord server on the right, or visit bit.ly/fakechat. Now, here's your host, the Fakeologist, Aberrato. Okay, you hear that music. That can only mean one thing. It is time for Fakeologist Radio. It's 1 o'clock or so, 13:31 on July 8, 2018. It's the height of the summer here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, the lake on the north shore of Lake Ontario, the media capital of Canada. And we are broadcasting live. It's Fakeologist episode 204 with probably two of my favorite people in fake research, or just in general, in the entire world, Simon and Hoi Ploy. Simon Shack and Hoi Ploy are joining me live. Hi, guys.
Hello.
And that song you just heard was Niagara from the world-famous September Clue soundtrack, probably my favorite soundtrack of all time when it comes to a movie. And Simon Shack and the Social Service invented that, created that. And I don't think, like many bands, he's ever topped that. That is just the best collection of music, and it's, you can purchase it to support Simon. And it's still my favorite of all time, but Simon has many other albums. But to me, that's still the penultimate. Simon?
Your voice there in Niagara sounds like what the one I was talking about, where it's like a voice in an old Can song from the 70s or maybe 80s, and then suddenly it tilts down into that, like, it's not baritone, but it just kind of goes, the kind of muffled, you know, microphone kind of.
The microphone, I just close it, you know.
But it's the way you took the clips from all of the prefabricated 9/11 footage and encapsulated, and they just flow beautifully. They almost sound like they're part of the song.
But they were so funny. I had so much fun selecting, you know, these various anchor men and anchor women's speeches on that day. They were saying funny things, and the more you listen to them, I think the more you realize how scripted they were.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, go to September Clues, the movie. It's still on YouTube, I think. It's also on FakeTube, which means it's on fakeologist.com. Go to the top and click on September Clues soundtrack.
The best link should be septemberclues.info.
Okay. It's on
We will always have that there. And it also links to our 12 language translations now. Do we have?
Yeah.
About 12?
12 different,
with subtitles.
Subtitles.
And it should be the most famous, most important, widely watched movie in the world. I don't know if it is yet, but it is just, if you don't understand 9/11, then you have to watch this movie. And I've been looking into this for 6 years, and nothing has changed, in my opinion, on my view of the movie. It's revelation has not been debunked. It's not been dislodged in any way that I can find. And I think it, I don't think anyone's going to even bother trying now. I think it's over in terms of people trying to get people off the central message of that movie.
Right.
Yeah, the central message of the movie, of course, is that the whole, all of 9/11 was a controlled jamming of any real media and a surplus, a glut of fake media to drown out any, you know, questions of whether what happened was anything different from what was shown in the media. So, you know, you have over 40 and a growing number of so-called amateur videos taken by media professionals and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
but we're not here to talk about September Clues again.
No, but I can't. I know there's a lot of people that listen, and I couldn't talk about it. I could never be tired of talking about it, to be honest with you, because it is the key to everything we see today. Really, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you could also more briefly sum up the September Clues being a prefabricated movie, split in small parts and sold to us as newscasts on TV. So that's how I, you know, the shortest possible description, I think. That's what they did. They showed us something that they had prefabricated.
Yeah, it's just like a Hollywood movie. They made special effects. They had some simulation software, which was faulty, and that's part of the reason that we could detect it, that it was fake, is that they messed up when they were combining different realities and making their collage, if you will, of footages.
But in any case, and even if they did mess up, nobody really noticed except you guys. That's the main idea. You guys noticed it. You noticed enough mistakes to put the whole thing together and figure out what was happening. But overall, it just went by most people.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Although if people take the time to look at it, they can detect it for themselves. Absolutely. It's just that most people's attention spans are not so strong.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's a perfect sieg to Tycho's.
And really, that is a perfect segue to Tycho's, because people are already saying, oh, the Tycho's can't possibly be reality. This new solar system model that Simon's developed, because, it just can't. And they won't even read, the proofs. They just dismiss it.
Well, they won't even look up at the sky and try and just figure out basic astronomy. Then that's, and I know that you've said it's a very easy thing to figure out once you are able to look up in the sky and track some of the movements. But as I've told others, that you guys always get the benefit of the doubt with me, because let's face it, you guys have been the most concise, just had the best explanation of 9/11, a media fakery, and that's so important to my and many other people's reality that whatever else you discover and want to expose and discuss, you just automatically get the benefit of the doubt. I mean, obviously we have to trust somebody out there, and you have to make your choices and choose wisely, and I don't like to use the word follow so much, but really, you guys both have earned the trust of most of the people and mainly me, from my website. So even if it's a subject I'm not thrilled or interested in, you guys are at least worth listening to whatever it is you have to say. So I just wanted to put that up front. You've earned the trust from me, and therefore whatever you guys have to talk about, I'm most interested in understanding at least. So,
well, thank you. I really hear that message loud and clear from you, and I really appreciate that. If you don't mind me making just one tiny little correction. In the beginning, you said that, you know, we say, oh, it's so easy to understand the stars if you just look up. Well, look, we have to be very clear here. This is not just about, oh, go outside with your telescope. No, this is about the amalgamation of all the astronomical data collected over centuries and centuries of study by many different cultures, you see. So it's not that we're saying, oh, you can just go outside and, oh, yeah, there it is, the Tycho's. No. The point is, after looking at all the raw data and just trying to make sense of it, if you take the time to see what the evidence shows, then you will come up with something like the Tychos. That's the point. It's not that it's like very simple. No, astronomy is complex. It is a complex subject. We must all admit this, because otherwise why would we have, you know, five or six competing systems over the years, with sometimes the Earth at the center, sometimes the Sun at the center, sometimes nothing, and so on. You know, it is complex.
Mm.
It is. And go ahead, Simon.
It is complex, but on the other hand, right now, for instance, we're having a great time here in the USA, where I've come over and to meet Hoy and meeting lots of interesting people of all kinds, and it's really, in spite of its complexity, it's much easier to, you know, when you meet someone face to face, it's pretty easy to show what my book is about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm talking with all kinds of people, housewives, people with no astronomical background. But it seems it is really much easier to meet people and explain to them face to face. That's why I was eager to come over here now that I have the book ready.
And do lectures and speeches.
You're on a book tour. So you are on a book tour of America. You're with Hoy Polloi somewhere in the southwest of the United States. And you're...
It's not really a tour. I mean, we are doing what we can, just to go into places, trying to contact people within astronomy.
Well, that's what I'm looking forward to, really.
Yeah. And confronting the data, because what Hoy just explained is an interpretation of the data that already exists.
Yes.
It's nothing. It's not a new invention, or I haven't seen any funny things in the sky which have illuminated me to anything.
I get it.
It is just an interpretation of what we have, and the most logical one, and the only one that works, the only one that actually matches and agrees with observation. And any astronomer will agree that the Copernican system has a series of problems still. We could say maybe a dozen, half a dozen problems, maybe 10, let's say. And those problems have to do with mostly with the geometry of the system. And I believe I have solved each one of them in the book.
Let me just add one more thing before Ab, you respond. Okay, please. Yeah. The other thing is that it's not just a new interpretation of old data. It also is the most refined and, I think, mature response to the newest data that we're seeing. Like, not just speculating about exoplanets and nebulae and things, but actually the newest data that we're using, adaptive optics, and we're understanding binary star motion now. And these new understandings are giving us insight into what our system most likely looks like. So people say, oh, we're pulling this out of, you know, medieval times. No, it's about the newest information that should be enlightening us to the fact that, oh, we probably are very much like the stars we see out there. We're not just some extremely special, extremely unique, you know, absurdly unique in an almost infinite. Yeah,
that was an excellent clarification. I mean, of course, I was saying we're looking at the ancient data, but I could not have come to any conclusion without the last two decades of astronomical discovery, because they have discovered new things in the last 20 years, and this has to do with binary systems. They have discovered that 85% of the stars that we see are double. And that's basic, the basic theme of the Tychos is that we are a binary system, and it's composed by the Sun and Mars. And that's something no one has ever proposed. No one has ever thought that Mars could be the companion of the Sun, because it's a very small object. And so it doesn't fit into Newtonian theories.
But before you explain why you think that's such a great idea, let Abs say something.
I suggest the basics of the system on the table.
No, that's fine. I was going to get to all that, but it's fine. I don't mind creating just a conversation between us and letting it go where they may. But I wanted to also say that's important that Simon, I know you're not officially on tour in the sense that you don't have a publisher that is bringing you around with a publicist. If your publicist or your English translator or your English explainer is Hoi Polloi, of course. And I've said before, and I've said it many times, that I think Hoi has the most clear writing style of anyone in this community I've ever read. And even his emails, I hope it takes you 3 hours to write your emails because they're so clear and book-like.
He writes them extremely fast, and that's what always surprises me.
Okay, well, there you go. So you just have a way of clarifying it, so I think... Obviously, Hoi has been your partner in September Clues, the website, cluesform.info, and he
is invaluable all the time.
Yes, he has written, Simon writes like Hoi as well. You're Simon, I've always said, you are, I don't want this to be just a promotional
Far, far slower. Far
I know, but
slower.
You write in such a clear way, it's almost like the person that writes and the person that talks is a separate person. In the sense that your writing is so succinct and to the point, and it's so clear. And Hoi writes huge prose where he clarifies, almost book-like posts. So
yes, thank you. That's a kind way of saying that I can be a bit of a windbag in text.
I think it's all valuable.
In that sense, we're complimentary.
Yeah, Simon is a little more succinct and a little more sarcastic. And you just pick one thing and then you fire it because, you know, probably that's as much attention as anyone can give to anything. Right. And, so I think that the combination of you two, if there is something for the establishment in astronomy to understand, you two have definitely the best chance of any two people to get it across and hopefully you can do that. But so you're on.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. No, I think if I wasn't sure if Hoi was 100% on your side in the sense that he wanted to take this on and try and bring it across to the astronomical world. Because
that's a fair question.
In the beginning.
You know, look, I am supportive of Simon's work because, as far as I can tell, people just haven't really listened. Okay. So what's annoying to me, one of the reasons I'm extremely supportive of Simon's work even before I have been fully understanding it is because, first of all, the things that I do understand, the things that do get through make a great deal of sense to me. And the Copernican explanation is so faulty, so problematic. And so smelly, like the 9/11 nonsense, that it's like, oh, okay, I get that. This has been going on for millennia.
Oh, yes.
But the real thing is just, to me, like, I just want people to give Simon a fair shake. And it's amazing that people who even want to say, oh, yeah, NASA certainly is fake. You know, they certainly fake their accomplishments, at least. You know, they use CGI to fake their accomplishments. This is something that many of us can now agree on, even if we have different cosmologies. They still don't just study the topics. They don't want to. It's too much. And I think that that's a shame because Simon, as you say, he's so articulate and he's so able to simplify and clarify issues.
Yeah, simplify and clarify.
That if we don't give him a chance to explain these things, when will we ever make room in our lives to understand instead of just going along with the mainstream, assuming Michio Kaku and Stephen Hawking and Neil deGrasse Tyson and all these clowns are basically...
And the clowns before them, too.
Yeah, are somehow... They must be right just because they're listened to and they're kind of charismatic.
And I understand how this works now because this is where I want to try and put these two concepts together because you guys are the main revealers of the 9/11 deception. without you guys, we would still be spinning around in circles looking, trying to arrest George Bush and Dick Cheney, because that's all there was. So you guys have the best explanation. It's been 6 years that I've looked into it. Nobody has come close. They've only just waved you off and laughed you off. They've absolutely not really addressed any single super concrete pillar in your arguments, including Hoyt created the Vixen Report, which is the most important part, I think, of the whole thing, because without that, there is...
There's
still murder on people's minds. But with the Vixen Report, the whole thing has... It crumbles down into a basic movie. Mm-hmm. So we... like I've said many times, I now understand that you can fool the entire world on any concept you want, as long as you say it over and over and over again and drown out all the pipsqueak opposition to it.
Yes.
And the pipsqueak opposition will disappear as we only are on this plane or planet for, or however you guys want to describe it, for a brief speck of time. And once the few of us that are against something disappear, it's gone. The history is written, and no generation will ever discover it unless they're wandering or digging through the ground and dig up a time capsule, and then they say, what's this? And I get all that. I just listened to a podcast. I'm listening to mainstream media podcasts, going back to some of the best ones, and I just learned about the history of the neutrino. I've got a 9-minute clip I'll just post it in the show notes, but I wouldn't mind you listening to it for a minute. But what it does is explains how what we call the smartest people in the world, they come up with an idea, and everyone thinks they're just godlike in their brain power. We can't touch them. So when they come up with a crazy idea that, say, refrigerators fly, and they say it over and over again, and they say, here's the data, and everyone knows that refrigerators don't fly. But everyone says, this guy is so smart that I can't argue with him. And I think that's the genesis of what we call dark matter in the neutrino, for instance.
Yes, and as we've just been watching online in some videos, dark energy, too, is now... They have dark matter, and now they have dark energy, and they say this permeates everything and gives us a rationale for why we believe that the Big Bang, you know, is the start of the universe. But why do we need a rationale for that? Why must we justify things against data now? You know, why do we always take devil's advocate? Why don't we just continue collecting data?
And come up with better theories and not give up when the person who says this is the biggest genius of our generation says it so, and we must listen and no one can dispute it, and on we go. Because only a few people are really interested in arguing against, say, the neutrino. Only a few people are now willing to argue against Copernicus, because A, we're in a money system. There's no money to do that. There's no reason. There's no motivation to do it other than just general knowledge. And general knowledge, even in universities, is always under attack, because even teaching general knowledge is not considered a worthwhile thing to do, because it doesn't get you a job. It doesn't make you productive in the money system, you see.
Yes. So it's hard to talk about these things without sounding like victimized, because, I mean, I guess I could just say thank you for the venue. Thank you for creating a welcoming space for us, because it is rare. It is so rare. And you are a rare individual yourself for just being willing to listen. So, and not only that, but encouraging others to listen. So thank you for your space and for your time.
Welcome.
Thank you.
No, not at all. And even though this isn't my greatest interest, I'm just trying to, again, take the greatest deception that you've uncovered, and maybe you are now revealing the next biggest deception or a bigger deception with your ability to look into and to explain. So maybe now this is just another example of how you're taking the data that you're given. You didn't invent any data over 9/11. You just took what we were given. And then you reinterpreted it in a way that it all makes sense to me. And that's why I'm so grateful to you guys, because every crazy story in the media now never made any sense. But if I take your lessons from 9/11, it all makes sense. So perhaps, and I'm just trying to simplify things for people that are going to look into Tycos, that perhaps you're taking all this data that is explained by the Copernicus, except there's so many exceptions that they have corrections to the corrections to the corrections, and you have one simple template that fits, and all the data falls with between the lines based on your model.
Yep. That's a good summary.
Yes, this will summarize. It's also, even if it looks, the trajectories of our own systems, planets, look a bit more complex because Mars is doing some kind of spirographic trajectory over the years. The whole system is actually much simpler, and it is the only system which allows for uniform circular orbits, which simply means completely circular, round orbits, no elliptical shapes. And that's it. That's what, for millennia, all astronomers have been looking for, to make our system agree with what nature suggests should be an orbit, which it should be round, perfectly round. And the Tycos works that way. And it works with great accuracy. And as you know, we've done with Patrick in Sweden, we managed to make a simulation, a 3D, 2D and 3D simulation of the whole, of our inner solar system. And going back and forth for hundreds of years, it remains accurate. So it works perfectly. And we have created those Tycosiums, as we call them, the 2D and 3D planetariums, using the available data. I mean, it's not like I have been spending 20 years collecting my own data, but I'm using data which I feel is valid because, you know, I can't dismiss all of the data accumulated over hundreds of years. I don't, even if we now know that there are people lying to us, but
yes.
It's not like all astronomers since the 16th or 15th or even in the last 2,000 years have been lying. There have been many people who have diligently, you know, put down the data from them, even back to the Mayas. And the Mayas have, you can extrapolate from the few documents from the Mayas, very precise figures, which match with, incredibly enough, with the Tycos. That's what I've been noticing. Yeah. So from antiquity to this last few decades has been the range that I've been looking at. And if I'd done this research only 20 years ago, I would not have reached any conclusion because the modern things that have been discovered are essential. The fact that most stars are double. So, which makes the idea of the Tycos of the Sun and Mars being a binary system very likely, extremely likely. Statistically, you know, it is logical.
Yeah, so please let us know as we explain any questions at all, you know, any protests, because really you will be representing perhaps a mainstream view, because that's the one that we all grew up in, you know. This carousel, this Copernican thing where the sun must be at the center and everything must be going around that, regardless of any trochoidal motions resulting from the sun, you know, flying around the Milky Way's galactic center or whatever it is they say is going on. You know, the simplest explanation we all learn in, you know, second grade is, you know, a big sun, and then we have, you know, you can make a mobile. You know, it's a little harder to make a mobile of the Tycos, and so maybe that's why it'll be unpopular with second grade teachers. But it's
feasible.
But it's feasible, and actually, it's something that we should be teaching our children because it is, as Simon pointed out, what we're observing in most of the stars is binary systems. So.
Okay, can I just back up just a bit here because I can't challenge you on any of the data and any of the things that you're talking about, because it's just beyond. I know you say I could probably learn it because I'm supposed to be a smart guy. But let me just back up with Simon. Simon, How did you get involved again in looking into this? Because I don't even know if some people think it's a big leap to go in from media fakery to studying the stars, but you may have said it before, but can you just say it again? Why, how did you transition into this? Why did it take 5 years? What is the genesis of this?
Well, it took 5 years because it was a lot of work to verify. But I started, my curiosity, the curiosity I had was for a very, for something that I discovered by chance almost. It was that, something which is called the analemma. And the analemma is simply the shape that the sun will do over a full year.
Okay.
If you put up a tripod in your garden, put your camera there. I know you have one.
Yes.
You have a good camera. Well, if you're patient enough, you can take a picture of the sun throughout the year, like every 10 days maybe.
Okay.
And the sun will trace an eight-shaped
It's a figure eight in the sky.
A figure eight in the sky.
It looks like if you took like the number eight with a small loop at the top and a big loop at the bottom, and you stretched it out. You know, that's from the northern hemisphere. We're seeing this, and you have obviously the sun going higher and lower in the sky. Everyone knows that happens
Between summer and winter. Between summer and winter,
Why would noon be a little earlier or a little later? Why would that happen?
Why would it drift from east to west also?
Why would it go left, right instead of just up and down?
Well, right. I have a new interest in the sun now because I have done what very few people have done, or more and more people have done where I live, and I think it's a revolution that will change the world, like Tycho's. I have covered my roof in solar panels now.
Good job.
Well, it's very fascinating because each panel, I have about 43 panels now. I don't have really any room left. I've maxed out for various reasons, technical reasons. But the point is, I love to study each panel because they all have their own reading in wattage on what they're receiving.
And do you have the different colored ones, like the bluer ones and the blacker ones and...
Well, I have a couple of types of panels because every year they get better and more efficient. But whatever I have is supposed to be the most durable and efficient for wherever I live in this climate. But the point is, I can go online and watch the wattage every single day. And it's very fascinating because I have obviously a house with four sides, and therefore the roof is all over the place. Some of it points east, some of it points west, most of it points east, most of it points west, and a bunch faces south. But the point is, every day the sun is in a different position. And I also find what you're talking about, the analemma, fascinating because it a lot of the times it doesn't make sense the way the sun goes. And I stare out my windows every day. Right. I see where the sun rises, and I just sort of mark it against something in the background, like a tree or a house. And it is fascinating to me the pathway it takes in the summer and in the winter, where it barely comes up.
If you had something that was at the right angle, you could actually have the shadows trace a figure eight as well. If you measured it at noon every single day while accounting for savings time, if you do that in Canada.
Yeah.
And you basically have, you know, supposedly the same time every single day, the shadows will also trace the same strange figure.
And wasn't that how they originally kept time with the sun and a shadow off a pole? Isn't there some correlation?
Yes.
Of course.
Sundial.
But they would also have seen the analemma because the sun keeps drifting by plus 16 or minus 14 minutes, so up to 30 minutes of oscillation from left to right, as Hoy said.
I'm looking online now. Analemma is from Greek, meaning support, is a diagram showing the variation of the position of the sun in the sky over the course of a year as viewed at a fixed time of day from a fixed location of Earth. The north-south component of the analemma is due to the change of the sun's declination. Here we go. This is maybe what – I don't know if you believe this. were caused by the tilt of the Earth's axis from the east-west component is due to a non-uniform rate of change of the sun's right ascension governed by combined effects of axial tilt and Earth's orbital eccentricity.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what you cross out.
Okay, so let's translate this. So in the Copernican system, they're trying to say is Earth is tilted at 23 some degrees. And so even though the sun is going around a normal or a normalized ecliptic, we see it, you know, going up or down in our skies based on where we are, the Earth, in its orbit around the sun is positioned. So we'll be tilted away from the sun, or we'll be tilted towards
the sun. The question of the analemma is not about the tilt, really. The tilt can be in a way or the other.
Up and down. The important left thing, and right position. You just totally walked all over what I was talking about and said I'm doing a terrible job.
By the way, are you guys in the same room? Are you using the same mic?
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure if so. Someone could grab the mic away, and then that would make the other person silent, right?
Yep, that's exactly what could happen. Or he could just shove me over, and I'm smaller than him. So
I was just suggesting you talk first about the.
You're telling me how to talk, but just let me finish and see if it makes sense to him.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, so. So as you were saying, as the analemma explains in the Copernican system, the up and down is supposedly because the tilted Earth goes around the sun, right? In the Tychos, just flip that around and you say, no, the sun is tilted and it's going around the Earth. Okay, that's it. Interchangeable, supposedly.
Yeah,
so
and let me just interrupt. One thing I remember from grade 9 science, I got a really good mark. No, actually it was grade 10 science and I got a really bad mark because I was leaving the school, but that's another story. But one thing the teacher asked me, and I don't know if this is related to what you're saying, he said, who can prove that the sun goes around the Earth or the Earth goes around the sun and why? And I knew immediately that I wasn't going to pass this test because I have no idea how the hell you would ever explain that because there's just no way. Is there any relation to this conversation in Tychos? Because I have no idea how to explain that to anybody.
Yes. So presently, let's just stick with the idea that they're interchangeable, okay? Because for many purposes, they are.
Yes, 100%.
Are you going to tilt the sun in its orbit, or are you going to tilt the Earth and its orbit? You know, it Copernican or heliocentric or geocentric, whatever you want, okay? But what is not explained, and here I will let Simon walk all over me, because he has this in his head. He understands this perfectly well. Why is it that the sun does this drift left and right? Why does it make this little loop at the top and a big loop at the bottom?
And I'm now looking at a picture online of this. Now at least it makes sense to me.
And many people they used to print this analemma on globes. You don't see it anymore. Maybe they just got embarrassed. They didn't know how to explain this well, so they just stopped printing it on globes. But old globes, you see this printed somewhere in the ocean.
Okay.
They would just
and I'm sure nobody knows what even that meant. Why did they put it in the ocean? What does that mean?
Well, it was just a place that they didn't have any land, supposedly. Maybe they're covering up an island, right? We don't have to go there. But basically, they would just put this thing on the globe somewhere to show, because often globes would have, you have the equator on the Earth, but then you also have the 23 degree tilt. And how do you explain how the 23 degree tilt moves? Well, you just put an analemma on there and that says, sometimes the sun is up here, sometimes the sun is down here. That's it. That's all I'll say. But Simon can actually finally explain the analemma properly and why the Copernican system has got it so wrong.
I just posted a picture. Just posted a picture of what you're talking about. It's on the globe. It's an analemma. I put it in the Discord live stream show notes. So now at least I can sort of get an idea what you're talking about. So go ahead, Simon.
Yeah. So the question becomes, I mean, you could say, looking at the analemma, you could say that, the sun seems to be accelerating and decelerating throughout the year. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because if it oscillates from east to west, you could say that it's actually speeding up and slowing down. So what makes this difference in the sun's speed, apparent speed? And in Hittaker's, it's quite simply explained because since, and we haven't even covered this yet, but in this talk now, but as I said before, the Tychos is the binary system composed of the Sun and Mars, which orbits intersect, and the Earth is kind of almost stuck in the middle, in the barycenter of their dance. So this means that, and also Earth has its own orbit, which is located within the Sun's orbit. Now, Earth only moves by 1 mile per hour. That's Earth speed. That is explained clearly in my book.
1 mile per hour where? At the equator, at the pole, or is it different?
That's the speed of Earth around its orbit, which I call the PVP orbit.
Okay, not on its axis.
No, around its axis, it spins once every 24 hours.
In other words, about on the equator, what did you say, 1,000 kilometers an hour or something?
That would be about 1,000 kilometers an hour, but it's a rotational speed. It's not a translational speed. The translational speed is, you know, the motion of Earth.
Through space.
Through space. Okay. And that's 1 mile per hour. By the way, where is it going? It's going around in orbit, like every single object we see in the skies.
Okay.
They all have orbits, and we just have an orbit, but it's not going around the sun.
What's it going around?
Nothing.
Nothing at all. In fact, all binary systems rotate around nothing. They rotate around a hypothetical, you know, barycenter. I mean, the physical barycenter, you could say.
It's not going around anything physical. There's nothing. There's no center.
No.
Center point. There's nothing there. There's no vacuum or anything.
No, you have to imagine our motion in 25,000 years around the PVP orbit, which is what I think is my main discovery is this orbit that Earth does. The PVP orbit lasts for 25,344 years, and that is the reason why we change North Stars, because we know that North Stars change over time. So that is the reason for the precession of the equinoxes. Hmm. Whereas the Copernican model doesn't have an explanation anymore for that precession, because that's also something that's been discovered in later years by independent researchers, not by the official mainstream ones. But some very smart independent researchers have shown that the North Stars cannot change because of this supposed wobble that Earth does, because Copernicus had to come up with the so-called third motion of Earth, which was a supposed wobble, which slowly, so the Earth would wobble around its axis in 25,000 years.
Do you want to explain why the wobble is impossible, or should we just move on from
that? The wobble is shown to be impossible by various independent researchers for various reasons, and one of them is that if Earth wobbled, you would be able to detect that by looking at the relative motions of our close planets against the stars, and there is no change there. So the wobble doesn't exist. So if the wobble doesn't exist, the Copernican system cannot explain the precession of the equinoxes.
It also kind of means the Copernican system is dead was found murdered in a room, and nobody knows right. why no one has recognized that the Copernican system has been dead for hundreds of years. Mm. You know, if the lunisolar wobble is disproven, it's the end.
It's the end for the Copernican system
right there. And there's,
it is dead.
And there's even 10 more proofs that we have that the Copernican system is this dead.
Right. So instead, to go back to the anathema, of course, the fact that we are slowly, slowly moving almost towards, well, for the last 100 years, always in the same direction, if you imagine we're going very slowly, this means that the sun that goes around us every year will at times go in the same direction of our motion, and at other times it will go on in the opposite direction of our motion. That's why it will seem to accelerate and decelerate. Because in June, imagine the sun going around us, okay? And we are moving inside the sun's orbit always in the same direction very slowly. Then in June, we will go in the opposite direction of the sun. And in December, when the sun will be underneath us, if you imagine, you know, looking at the screen, then we'll go in the same direction. So this very slight difference of going in the same or the opposed direction will create the lateral oscillation of the analemma. And this was what I postulated first, and then I calculated it using my 1 mile per hour figure, which is also 1.6 kilometers an hour. So
1.601169?
Yeah, okay. Well, 1.6 kilometers an hour, you could say. I used that, the proportion now between, since I could say, well, so the Earth goes at, the relative speed of Earth in relation to the Sun is a certain percentage, okay? It's 0.0014932. Now, to make a long story short, I found that 0.0014932 is the same percentage as the oscillation, the lateral oscillation. It's hard to explain now, right now here on the radio, but it's in the book and it's described in pretty simple maths. It's not very complicated. I just do a reduction and I do an average of the oscillation of the sun, and I find that that average corresponds. It actually proves this 1.6 kilometer an hour speed.
So, like, when we look at the analemma, if you see the figure 8 in your head...
I'm looking at it on the screen.
You could say that the top of the 8 is July, okay? And the bottom is December.
Yep, that's what it is on the globe here that I'm looking at. Yep.
So, but imagine the figure 8 being drawn like you go from July left and down over to August, and then you reach where the two, where the cross is in the middle of the eight, and that's first September, and then we go down and over, and we keep going down and right to October and November as the sun is decelerating. Mm-hmm. Now in November through February, we'll see the sun accelerating again, and it will go from plus 15 minutes over to minus 15 minutes between November and February at the bottom of the eight. Then, as the sun starts rising again through March, April, September, May, and June, and we go back up to the top, the sun decelerates again, or appears to decelerate. And it will cross over that same point that it was in August 29th, September, and April 15th. And then it returns and it does the same thing over and over again every single year. Mm. And it's very steady, very reliable. It's like a clock.
Whereas the Copernican explanation for this doesn't work because between June and mid-July, the sun accelerates. Whereas that should be, in the Copernican system, the period where the sun is slowest or Earth is slowest, since it is Earth in the Copernican system that goes around the sun. So, between June and July, there is an acceleration of the sun, which is impossible in the Copernican system, because that's when the sun would be furthest from Earth. You might know that the sun is supposed to be furthest from Earth in the summer.
Okay, hold on. How do I see this?
So it should
be
slowest.
So you say between June and July. Now June, we just had the solar solstice, summer solstice. So June was, June, the sun on my street.
Top right of the analemma.
Yeah,
right.
But I'm looking on my street. So you're saying between June and July, the sun goes, starts off in the sky at a different spot more quickly. So in other words, the sun is going to move from its farthest point north in my sky down. It'll start going farther south, starting off further south.
Slowly. You know, June and July, it'll be drifting from right to left.
Well, on my sky, it'll be going from north to south in the morning. Is that right? Where does it, is this where, does that have something
we're
to do
talking, with? We're talking about one day, at the same time, and then the next day at the same time, and the next day at the same time. Not how the sun goes over the course of a day, But mm-hmm. where noon where is.
I'm just saying where it starts in the morning, because I can always tell where it starts because I'm always looking at it, because sure. I want to watch the sunrise and sunset. That is the most obvious time when the average person like myself looks at the sun, because I don't look at the sun at 12 because it's too bright and hot and I'm busy. But in the morning, right. I see where it starts and I see where it sets. And are we saying where it starts every single day moves more quickly? Every day it keeps moving down the sky faster.
It certainly changes the place where the sun rises and sets changes throughout the year. But
yes.
This is, this is hard to talk about. Now we're talking about the analemma, which is really when the sun is, where the sun is at midday.
Midday. This is always midday.
Something you can compare is throughout the year, you see. Whereas, I guess you could compare also the sunrises and sunsets, but we don't talk about that right now.
Okay, I getcha.
Ab, sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Where did you post the link to Listen In Live?
Oh, to Listen Live, we use first of all, go to the main site, fakeologist.com, and this is episode 204, and there's a link, and I'll say it to you. It's very easy. It's always the same every week. It's fakeologist.com/S'sAndSam/radio2. So if you want to listen live ever, doesn't matter what platform we're broadcasting off of. For instance, sometimes we're connecting on Discord. Sometimes we connect on Skype. Sometimes we connect on Google. So those are the three places we gather. But the output is always the same place. fakeologist.com/S/S/radio2. That's my own little shortener there. It should always stay the same. And that will go to a audio server. And you can use it on your desktop. You can use it on your phone, your smartphone, your tablet, whatever. It will work. And we have five.
Thank you. Kham is listening in, and we might dial her in a couple hours if we're still talking.
Yeah. Well, actually, we can always continue this. To me, it's high noon in the day here, and it's hot, and I just wanted to. I was going to postpone this to the evening when I know I could draw it out farther, but I wanted to. I figured since you're here and I don't know what your plans are, I always want to catch people when they're available. And I did say this time originally, so I did not want to miss it. That doesn't mean we can't continue later if we want to go farther, but I really wanted just to connect, let people know you are live in the United States, you're touring, and you are talking about Tycos. You have a book. People can buy it, and they can support you by purchasing it, a digital download, and Hoi Polloi is with you, and Hoi Polloi is your definite person to explain this. Simon,
absolutely.
Astronomy is just a big topic. It's like talking about the encyclopedia. Mm. It is vast, It is vast. There's so many things to talk about the sky and Tycos. The explanation is, for the average person, I'm sorry, Copernicus is not on anyone's radar in this world that I know of. There are very few people who even know who the hell he is.
That's a close case. They're not even talking about the Copernicus system anymore, astronomers themselves. It's a funny thing that Hoi has been looking. You know, we have been looking at, trying to contact professors of all kinds all over the place. And there is almost nobody is studying our solar system anymore.
Yeah, that's really, like 99% of the astrophysicists now are... They all want to find dark matter around an exoplanet
astrophysicists.
How the Big Bang started, you know?
That's what they call astronomers now. I mean,
Because an astrophysicist is, to me, a modern term for mystery man. In essence,
that is what it is. It's about speculating within the science fiction of the Copernican system.
Yes, exactly.
It's about creating new content for Star Wars and Star Trek. It's not really about determining where we are.
It is
said,
somebody
we
explaining
can't really do that anymore.
An invisible world. I can't argue with an invisible world explanation. If you tell me there are unicorns dancing in front of my eyes, but they're too small for me to see, I can't argue with you. I can barely see my screen right now, so I can't argue about the invisible world. If you want to make up some cockamamie story about what's happening, and that's the way you make a living, I'm not going to argue with you. I'll just call you crazy and just walk away. So the point is, that's what I was going to ask you, who are the astronomers today, and what are they doing?
Okay, we have managed to find a few. We've been emailing them. Many of them are on vacation right now, of course. In August, while Simon is still here in the States, we do hope to make connections. We really hope to get people to come, if they're in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, to ALCON, which is starting Wednesday this week. That's the 11th through the 14th. That is in Bloomington. It's in a, you can look up ALCON, A-L-C-O-N. 2018. We'll be there presenting the Tychos and explaining the Tychos in the book, and also showing a 3D model of the Tychos and explaining what we're trying to do here on the radio, which is much easier than trying to explain the complicated visuals.
By the way, how did you get into audio that? Only. Was that hard? Yeah.
No, no, we just, I think they're probably, you know, look, this is the joke I made with Simon.
I'm still surprised we
got
in there.
We just paid
easily.
Like a $50 table fee, which is actually cheaper than some comic conventions, I must say. And they were probably desperate. You know, more people are into movies and comics than they're into
No one is interested in astronomy anymore, and astronomers are much to blame for that. Just as you mentioned before, I understand why people will have lost, you know, they lost interest in astronomy because there is so much blah, blah, you know, from, you know, they're only looking at very distant things nowadays. Mm-hmm. And no one is really agreeing that they all have conflicting theories, even if the Big Bang thing seems to be the consensus, but there are many, many different theories of the universe. And so no one is interested in astronomy anymore. And so it really is about time that we at least get this geometry of our own system right. So we
can by the way, I see your drawing board. You're on the list. I just looked at it. You're on the list of exhibitors. Yay.
Yeah.
Yes, we were surprised ourselves. We're actually waiting for the other shoe to drop, for Phil Plait to say, what? The Tychos? Get these clowns out of my space, you know.
I'm always expecting we'll something. I'm really very surprised that they let us so easily in there. I mean, we are right in the lion's den, you know, among the, you know, biggest astronomers of
presently,
America.
Before they move us, we're presently stationed right next to the table for Kitts Observatory in Tucson, which is actually a perfect connection because the three binary star research scientists that I found are all at the Tucson location.
All right.
And there are some people looking into that. But really, Tucson and Lemon Mountain or Mount Lemon or whatever it is, I think would be an area that we should be looking. Anyway, so I have to use the restroom. I'll be back.
Yeah, you are actually in between Astronomical League sales on this list and Night Sky Books and Cards by Jonathan Popple.
Right,
Stargazing
right.
Guide and Playing Cards.
I'm really looking forward. You know, I'm so much looking forward for these 4 days, actually. Three or 4 days we're going to be there with this little
Are you going to video it or take audio or take a recorder or just use your phone and record? I really want to hear you talk to somebody in the mainstream. Their reaction, Simon, is more valuable than my reaction.
I
want to hear what they say because...
Don't worry, we'll do that in time. We'll do it in time. For now, we're just, you know, seeing, testing what we can do ourselves and see, trying to meet as many people as possible. And then we'll try to document it as well. It's already a lot, you know, what we're doing, without thinking also of having documenting our journey. But we'll do our best now from as soon as possible
to
document what we are actually going through because it's exciting. I can't wait myself to talk with all kinds of astronomers from different parts of the world, actually. So
now, just out of curiosity, can you talk, if someone says, okay, what have you been doing for the last 5 years? You can say Tycho's research. But if someone asks you what you did before, will you talk about 9/11 at all? Will you be able to?
Yeah, well,
is that fair?
It's probably wrong to mix up the things, but yeah, I won't. Why should I dismiss what I've done before? Just it is. I know it would seem strange for people, most people. Why is this guy even? You know, he's done completely different things before. He's no background in astronomy. That's such a huge problem for many people. They will always focus on what kind of credentials.
Yeah, where were you trained?
I have instead of.
Yeah, where were you trained?
Where was I trained? I will always respond. Please read the book. That's what there is what. That's what you have to look at. The same as when I did September Clues. People were spending time trying to find out who I was. No, watch the movie and see if it makes sense to you. How important is it, who did it? I wasn't a Hollywood expert, but I did the September Clues, okay? I wasn't a CGI expert.
Well, they want to find a way to dismiss you quickly. So if we find out you're from the cult of Zoran, say, where they believe in this and that, they can easily dismiss you.
Yeah.
Without reading it.
All right. So I am from no cult at all. That's what it may be. Something I keep repeating. I am totally independent, almost a hermit in what I do.
Can we blame you for the fact that you're from Italy?
Affiliated to anyone?
Can we dismiss you because you're from Rome, Italy?
Some have done that, haven't they?
Yes.
Oh, he lives close to the Vatican. Well, I'm not very close, but I can actually see it far in the distance from my house.
You go every weekend to the large telescope and you see dancing whatevers. And you've got the keys to the engineering room of the whatever telescope is there. And you've seen it all. you've seen the edge.
No, but I haven't even been using telescopes for the Tycho's research. It's not
important. Yeah.
It's not, well, I will start doing it now because I have an interest in understanding more how telescope viewing works. But that wasn't essential because all the tables were there for all to look at. I mean, all those hundreds of great people have spent lifetimes accumulating these tables. Someone has to make sense of them because they do not make sense geometrically when you look at them.
I'm back. What are you talking about?
Have I any experience in astronomy? Have I looked in telescopes? And I say, no, that's not what my research has been about. And it wasn't needed as strange as it might sound, but I'm not
an observational
astronomer.
When you're at this convention, do you think we could have a call-in where you could just give me maybe 20 minutes on what's happening, what kind of reaction you're getting, maybe?
Why not do an update?
A check-in?
I mean, that's better than asking for the fucking $80 entrance fee, which they ask of people. I mean, they're supposedly giving people all this access to observatories. They're doing observatory tours here and there, but...
Yeah.
Well, they got, I don't know.
Hey, it's a money system. You got to pay for the place.
Yeah, but look, it's clear that there's something different. The dynamics are a bit different. You know, with many comic conventions, the entrance fee might be a small sum, but you pay like $200 for a table just to be there. This seems to be something a little different, where you don't pay much to be there, probably because they're desperate for any sort of new astronomical discussion, but then the people who come there have to pay so much. Maybe it's because most of them are retirees who just want to look at stars, or I don't know what that is.
Well, stars in the sky, not stars on the television. Let's get the right stars here.
Yeah.
So maybe we can do an update on what you're finding, what's happening, what kind of people are interested. Are they all gray wrinklies that are coming? Because let's be honest, the best people to talk to are young people, children. You're not going to convince. You're not going to convince people that have been through the system and trained. I think your best bet is to get young people, if there are any that are off their telescreens, to go look up at the sky and try and figure out some of the ideas that you say aren't too hard to figure out when you're tracking and looking at the data and trying to come up with an explanation.
I mean, I think we had good vibes when we presented the Stachys and at the co-op, for instance. At the,
oh, yes. No, people have said, well, basically, that. There's a a youth space in Minneapolis where we tested the talk. And of course, we were both a little nervous, and we spent, you know, 50 minutes of slides in 2 or 3 hours. But we got through it, and some of the reactions were good. You know, people said, wow, that's very interesting. And I don't think anyone argued. I think people just had a lot of questions. So yeah, that's the right track. And we could certainly, present at libraries. Gopi, our friend Gopi, has offered, a library space in Utah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, barring universities and things like that where, oh, you have to have sponsorship and everyone is scared of losing their career over, you know, stepping on someone's toes, which is a real thing. That's what we're finding. It's very, very real. There's this fear of losing their career.
Mm. Their income.
Yeah, exactly. Their tenure or even the chance for tenure. All this is kind of out the window if you just go to a public space. That's why I've been encouraging Simon to consider, you know, parks, and libraries and things like that.
You'll have to go to free speech zones if you're in the United States. You can't just pick
yeah,
up.
Which are usually like cages.
Yeah, near the edge of a cliff or in a noisy intersection or somewhere where nobody can actually approach you and talk to you. Yeah, it's something maybe else there. But that would be good if we got an update on that. And again, it's a pretty obscure topic for most people. And now that you've made it clear to me that astronomers don't really, or have been superseded by astrophysicists, which you rightly labeled as science fiction fantasy explorers, and they're nothing more and nothing less in my mind, then no one is really studying the stars. And so you're not going to get a lot of competition or pushback because there are no real experts out there to even defend the Copernican model.
Well, look, it's not entirely true. I mean, I don't mean to mischaracterize. There are people studying what they call white dwarfs, red dwarfs, brown dwarfs. There are people studying the movements of nebula and where stars are born. That's legitimate. What we're questioning is the amount of attention on extremely distant objects, which are there, versus the amount of attention on just us, where we are, what's going on. Yeah. It's almost as if people have given up. But Simon and I have found that that's not the full story. The full story is that there is a widespread social phenomenon that's something like the spiral of silence, as studied by media analysis people like Lehrer and so on. They basically say that you can't question the Copernican system even if though it has problems. And this has been going on for a long time. We found a book by August Titchener, a 19th century man who wrote really eloquently on the amount of people that kept trying to question the Copernican system and couldn't gain the gumption to go against
the popular theory. Swimming upstream.
So this has been going on for quite some time.
It has been going on for a long time that some people, some serious people have realized that, well, it's taboo to talk, to challenge a Copernican solar system.
And yeah, but this is just how things work in the world.
For hundreds of years.
There's no point in speaking out about global warming if you don't believe it's true, because that's not the way the wind is blowing. You're not going to get anywhere. If the money is following global warming, it doesn't matter if it's real. It has nothing to do with it. If there is a business case and a business model to be made to attack a phantom, they will,
yeah.
you will have to join in if you want a piece of the action. It doesn't matter if wind energy is the most ridiculous, unreliable, unstable, and dangerous type of energy available. If the money supply is being directed that way and you would like a piece, you will engage. You will not question
exactly.
It.
We would have no problems promoting September Clues if we simply said that Al-Qaeda faked it all. We would have no problem presenting the Tychos if we simply said, oh, that NASA proves the Tychos, you know, and therefore give money to NASA. It's the cart before the horse, and it's been this way for a long time. People don't actually want to look at the data, so that's all we're asking. So,
but you need the right people, the people that are in some kind of position that gets some kind of notice to look at the data and say, yes, your model fits better than the Copernican model.
Yes, exactly.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, it's not that we want people to be swept away by a Tychonic revolution.
Yeah.
The mistake would be, what is that classic maxim or parable about humanity is this person trying to mount a horse and constantly falling off the other side. You know, we don't want something that is just as oppressive as what we have now. But it would help to have some, you know, eccentric billionaire to find the Tychos and want to promote it or something.
You know, I simply can't believe there aren't enough people, honest people in the world that, you just cannot find them because of what you just said.
Yeah.
Because there must be enough people. I'm just hoping that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm hoping that there should be enough people which are not compromised in such a deep way in their careers that they cannot see, or they will, you know, and they can perennially deny the Tychos, because the Tychos, there's no other way I can tell you. I really believe that I have put my finger on the problem. I found the pieces of the puzzle which were missing for Tycho Brahe. Tycho Brahe was very close to the truth. He just didn't know about the existence of binary systems,
which are
now the majority of the stars in our sky are double. So we should be also a double star. So it's so logical. And the more I even read my book again the other day, and it's always better when you detach yourself from your own work and then read it later, and I felt it was so easy. Of course, I know already what I'm talking about, but it was very, very flowing. The whole logic of the Tychos is very flowing. Once you also, anyone, gets familiar with a few basic things, it's not a very complicated model. It's quite simple and logical.
Well, I'm most interested in getting the reaction on audio or written down from people that are into this field. I really want to see if any of them are going to look at it and address it. That's going to be your biggest lever, getting this idea into anyone's attention, really. I think that would be the most important thing, is trying to get reactions, forced reactions if possible, from people in this community, if there is an astronomical community, and getting them to put their name saying yay or nay. Really, if you want to be blunt about it, just give a vote, thumbs up or thumbs down. Is this worthy of consideration? And if not, what are the reasons why not? Now, I have a few critics on my site that I haven't inventorized them, but one of them I just saw in the show notes saying, was Tycho Brahe even a real person, or his story can be his
you know,
backstory?
That's the sort of stuff that, you know, makes me
angry.
No, it makes me sad that this is now going on your site. That now Tycho Brahe never existed and stuff like that.
If that idea appeals to you, Ab, you know, I would say we'll just focus on the data. I mean, see if you can.
Well, I'm just trying to bring up the very, and you might call them weak criticisms of the whole.
I can't even see a reason for anyone, making up the whole figure Tycho Brahe. There is no basis in even thinking such a thing. Mm-hmm. So, okay, it doesn't matter. Okay, so Tycho Brahe was a personage made up by some writer. Okay, but he still has done all his observations. They are there on tables. They are verifiable, and there's lots of things that can be verified.
Yeah, I mean, you may as well say, the Maya and Aztec civilizations also never existed, and that's fine. If you want to go there, you can, and then we'll just have to agree to disagree. We have the difference in philosophy, but let's face it. We are agreeing with the mainstream that there are certain elements of history that are worth plucking out and saying, hey, have we analyzed this fully, you know? They would say, yes, it's fine, it's all done with.
So you can separate the data from the personality. It doesn't matter. The personality isn't too important, even though his name is attached to this. This is not the Simon Schack. Well, actually, at one point, it was the SSSS, the Simon Schack solar system model. But then
that was more of a joke, you know. It was kind of like, what will this reveal?
And I wrote that on the very first post. It was a bit, you know, in jest.
Okay. But you are saying that you're labeling it Tycho's model because he was the one that was promoting this at what, back in whatever year it was.
Let's go back to what he discovered.
What is it that he brought to the The geometry of the system is the closest, you know, the closest, the best option of all. But the thing is, you know, he had the sun's orbit intersecting on Mars's orbit, and people were laughing at him because of that. All people, I mean, his peers, all the academia was laughing at Tycho Brahe because, you have the sun and Mars.
What is the problem with
their orbits?
What was their problem with that?
They would inevitably crash into each other. Okay, but
can we just get back to what is Mars? Because are the lights in the sky that we call planets, are they actual physical anything, or does this have anything to do with determining what they are, in your opinion, or how do you?
Look, we can also say they are lights, okay, but it doesn't change anything at all as far as the geometry is concerned.
Right.
Let's say, I could even say, okay, you don't want to believe they are globes. Okay, fine, but they've been there for millions of years, or if you don't agree on that, well, then we can't discuss anything at all. But if you agree that these lights have been there forever and they move the way they move, then we can at least start discussing.
So that's not relevant to you and the theory at all?
I believe that they are planets. I believe we are a globe.
Okay.
That's my best guess. Okay.
You know, it is not relevant though. I mean, that's Simon's belief, but the Tychos doesn't even discuss that. The only thing that he speculates about in the book at all is this thing called stellar metamorphosis, which has to do with the fact that stars and planets seem to be very related, and it's a possibility that this certain researcher has brought up, can't remember his name.
Jeff Polinsky,
that planets are essentially just extremely, extremely old stars. And stars will eventually die and become a planetoid or a planet. And similarly, Earth may have been, you know, just a really fucking old star. That finally burnt out, and we have evidence of this in the heat and the, you know, the certain formations that happened on the planet that could only have happened at extremely much, much higher temperatures, things like that. So the idea of a Big Bang and stuff, we just kind of put that aside and say, well, why not consider Mars a star? Kepler did. Kepler called it the motions of the star Mars, and so on. So we may as well just say star, planet, it doesn't matter what you're looking at. We're just tracing the movement of these bodies.
So
it doesn't matter what you call it. It doesn't matter what you say it's made of. It could all be made of cheese. But how is this cheese moving? How is it moving in relation to the cheese that we're standing on? that's the only question. That's all we're asking people to look at.
The only differentiation I would make is between a moon and a planet star, because the moons are like Venus and Mercury. They have no moons of their own. That's why I call them the moons of the sun. Any object that circles around another and has no satellites is a moon.
Okay. See?
So, but I've intuitively find it quite plausible that all the objects in our skies have been stars, and the rocky ones are very, very old ones, and so is Mars, and so is our very Earth. And I think that's the magma we find inside of our Earth, which sometimes spurts out of the volcanoes, is kind of evidence, maybe.
Those are real things, yes.
Those are real things. And what is this magma? Couldn't it be, you know, what is left of this burning star, which then it collapsed, like, you know, the hydrogen became our oceans, you know, it collapsed and became solid. And the crust was formed, and then inside we have still some magma left, and sometimes it comes out from the volcanoes. So I have no problem of thinking that our Earth was a star before. Okay.
So it's not important if we call Mars a planet or a light. It is just a specific, I guess it's red as well, light in the sky that it's behaves red, in a way that the movement we describe as an orbit, because it's most consistent with it going around something, and that's the only way you can model its movement, because it has to be some kind of circle or ellipse.
Yes, and it's not just the movement; it's also the size. It becomes larger when it becomes closer. It becomes smaller when it goes further away.
Okay.
And we're basically going on the assumptions that we're looking at some kind of 3D object. Okay, so. If you wouldn't mind just putting aside this whole concept of illusions and lights and things like that, and just go with us and say, okay, for now, let's consider them spherical, roughly spherical
globes,
things.
Globes, because in the case of Mars and Jupiter, you can even map the fact. I mean, you can see enough detail on Mars and Jupiter
to map the fact that
it's a 3D globe.
It's
not just a light, you see.
If you want to later take the Tychos and create some, you know, Star Trek-like Neil deGrasse Tyson math and say, oh, well, yeah, the Tychos works as well if they're all pear-shaped or whatever. It doesn't matter. Do whatever you want.
Okay, so your model says, I'm not going to adopt any model because, again, I'm not studying it like you. So I just want to get your model, and your model is it is some kind of sphere. It is some kind of sphere. It acts like a sphere. It can be mapped as a sphere.
Yeah.
And so is the sun. Sun is some kind
it's
of...
It's really, yes. really close to the mainstream system. We're not really going into any sort of flat earth discussions. We're basically just saying it's kind of like they say, there's planets, there's stars, they may be related, maybe not. But how would they move? Not in a Copernican fashion, because the Copernican fashion doesn't work geometrically. It's unphysical.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's unphysical because that can be actually observed, going back to what we said before, that can be observed pretty easily, if you want, because sometimes Mars will align with a certain star, and if you know when and where to look, you look at Mars in front of that star, let's call it star X, and you wait 1.5 years, and hey, Mars is aligned with this star X again. But in the Copernican system, that would be impossible. Because in 1.5 years, if we have an orbit around the sun, we would be, after 1.5 years, we'll be on the other side of our orbit, okay? And our orbit is 300 million kilometers wide. So if we have Mars on both of those dates, separated by 1.5 years, we have Mars in front of the same star, how could that possibly be? That would mean that parallax doesn't exist, which is absolutely absurd. Parallax is, put your finger in front of your nose and think that that's Mars, okay? And now put your finger against any star in the sky. If you just move 2 yards to your right, that finger won't be aligned anymore with a star.
Okay.
So that's parallax. Now imagine if your finger doesn't move just 2 steps, but your finger and your eyes, but your eyes and your finger move 300 million kilometers to one side. You will never be aligned with a distant star on both occasions. So, I know it's hard to explain in words. I can show you so easily in a second. If you were here with me, Ab, what I'm saying. How it's so much easier to show this, face to face with someone.
Let me give it a try.
Yeah.
I think I could do it over the radio. So do you understand the concept of parallax?
Barely.
Okay. Let's say you're driving in a vehicle.
Okay.
And there's 50 lanes of traffic to your left and 50
now
lanes of traffic
I can
to your
identify
right.
with that.
Okay. And
traffic and lanes.
Yeah. It's not a traffic jam. Everyone is going steadily. But now let's say that you have a chance to go faster. So now you're going faster than the other cars, okay? They're all going the same speed. They're all almost in a grid. But you, in your lane with no one else in it, you can just speed up. You're going maybe twice as fast. The cars immediately to your left and your right, they will pass by you. They will seem to pass behind you as you pass them.
Yeah.
They will go pretty fast. You may see one car, another car, another car, like that speed. But in the distant lanes, those cars will seem to drag.
They won't move. They won't pass them as fast. Yeah.
They won't pass as fast. You'll be able to see them in your vision much more because they've shrunk to the size of a distant object, right?
Okay.
So that's parallax. Parallax is the difference between that very close car and that very far car. The close car is demonstrating parallax because it goes in and out of your vision very quickly, but the one in the distance stays in your vision longer, and the trees behind them stay in your vision even longer, and the horizon and the moon all stay in your vision even longer than that because they're even further away.
Yes.
But the idea is that let's say you and a car are driving on this road for quite some time now, and you actually go from where you are to a road 300 million kilometers in the distance, and yet that car that you're driving next to is still facing the same distant object. How many lanes of traffic away would it have to be? You'd have to have, this object, let's say it's a car, if it were, in place of the moon or whatever you're putting far, far, far away, it would have to be the size of a universe by itself just for it to not move after so much driving that you've done. It will move. There'll be at least a slight movement. Hmm. The Copernican system argues that no. The stars are so incredibly huge, incredibly bright, unfathomably far away, that they don't move at all.
No, but they can't argue that they are huge because they are dots to us.
Yes.
From where we are, they are small dots.
But they would argue that they must be, somehow this powerful and yet this far away. The Tychos agrees with the Tycho Brahe's assertion that no, that doesn't make sense. How can it be that we are one little system in a huge void, and after Pluto, well, he didn't know of Pluto, but after the outer planets, there's nothing,
right.
And then maybe a whole bunch of stars, right? It just doesn't quite make sense to our logic. So the concept is, you can decide Earth is special or not special. That's a whole discussion of the geocentrists. But what if we are average? Then we should be kind of like the stars we look at. We should be about scattered, in a system where there's other stars around us that are kind of the same distance from one another. And that's where the Tychos just says, we're just an average system. We're just a binary system like most of the stars we see. And we're pretty close to them, and they're pretty close to us, and they're pretty close to one another. There is no, extremely eccentric property of this solar system that makes it move especially fast or be especially small or especially you know, anything like that.
Okay.
And yeah. So the example Hoy made with the closed car with respect to the distant mountain, it's the same as with Mars and this star. I said it's really a question of having a close thing move with your own motion as in relation to a distant object, and that really is parallax. The thing with that Copernicus say that no, stars are so far away, so we see a little parallax, but that question is only valid if you compare two distant stars between each other. But in this case, we're talking about Mars, which is much, much closer than any star. And so Mars is this thing that we can, we see aligning with the same stars in periods of 1.5 years. Now, in the Tychos, the fact that this happens, because it does happen, Mars does realign with the same star within 1.5 years, that is explained by the spirographic motion of Mars. And when we did the with the Patrick in Sweden, when we finally made the the simulation which makes Mars move around, I was of course very nervous to see if it would actually line up with the same star, and it did. So you can imagine how exciting that was. Mm-hmm. I had made some calculations I believed that the Tychos would explain that, but I wasn't quite sure. It wasn't until we made this Tychosium, the planetarium, that it was actually confirmed. And now I can show it to you here. I mean, if I start with the Tychosium, I tell you, look, here is Mars aligned in front of the star. Now we go 1.5 year forward, and it will be again aligned with the same star. In the Tychos, it works.
Without the Earth moving much, whereas in the Copernican system, they will say, oh, the Earth is, it's basically moved 300 million kilometers to one side of the sun. Yeah. So now another interesting proof of the Tychos is that the Mars will change size, in relation to its distance from the Earth. So in that first time where it aligns with the star, it's further away. And the second time it's closer or vice versa. You will actually see that happening. Mars will actually change in size in the sky. And we can actually see Mars. There's actually a photographer who's done really beautiful time lapse of Mars doing this loop-de-loop in the sky.
Retrograde motion.
Proving that the retrograde motion is the spirographic loop-de-loop. And you can actually see Mars getting larger as it comes closer in the loop-de-loop, and then it goes away again and it gets smaller. So we have photographic proof that Mars does these motions. We don't need to have it have this strange racehorse kind of motion where, you know, Earth and Mars are racing around the sun together and somehow Earth being overtaken by Mars, or rather going in the opposite direction. Yeah, they have these explanations, but it doesn't match the geometry. They have to come up with many perturbations and turbulences and so forth. But if you just put Mars in the right place doing the right thing, you don't need any of that. It's all uniform circular motion. Every orbit is uniform circular motion. No acceleration, no deceleration, no need for, you know, enormous epicycles or wobbles or anything. It's actually quite smooth, calm, uniform, if you just place things in the right orbits.
And extremely predictable.
And you can actually predict what you'll see in the sky perfectly. When we get the Tychosium 3D going with the stars in the background, that will be a longer project, but you'll be able to line up any point on Earth with the time and the data, time and date of observation and the location on Earth with what you'll actually see.
But there are even more refined things that the Tychos explains, and that is really hard. I keep saying this, but it's really hard talk about on air. Mm-hmm. But the refined ones, I'll just shortly explain what I'm, just to have an idea what I'm saying. The problems with both the Copernican and Tycho Brahe's old model were that they couldn't never explain the slightly irregularities of the motions of Mars, Venus, Mercury, and those objects we have around us, because they are not constant, okay? They have small irregularities that in time increase, and they have never explained that. Well, to make a long story short, and hopefully you'll have a hint of an idea what I'm meaning, those irregularities are simply all caused, they're all caused by the same fact that we move very slowly around our own orbit at 1 mile per hour. It is this little, very, very slow, very slow motion that explains those irregularities as well. And the fact that since we move so slowly and rotate every 24 hours, the annual motion of any person on Earth, let's say you yourself, mm-hmm. in Canada, okay? You yourself, you know what you do every year? You don't go straight on a straight line forward at 1 mile per hour. You will do a trochoid. What's that? A trochoid is simply, okay, it's a kind of a loopy motion, because you have to imagine that you are a dot on the wheel of a bicycle wheel. Okay? This bicycle wheel always turns, okay? Turns around itself, its yeah. axis, but it also goes slowly forward. So in a year, your actual trajectory, if I could picture you, Ab, from above, let's say I take a spaceship, I go above the Earth, I take a picture of you at midnight every night, and you flash a light at me, okay? Every night at midnight. Well, your path will make this trochoidal shape. You will actually make a trochoid. So imagine now that you're an astronomer and you're looking at a particular star. Well, that star will also do this wobble, this wobbly. Well, let's call it a trochoid, because that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. A trochoid.
And in fact, when you go on astronomy websites that deal with, that watch stars for several years at a time, you will see that they trace those trochoids.
Like, oh, I'm looking at a trochoid now. I looked at it up. Yeah. I looked it up. I get it.
That's because our frame of reference is trochoidal.
Yes.
As simple as that.
I can try to explain it another way, too. Imagine not just, so let's say, what are you physically doing in Toronto or wherever, just going around and round and round? And if you're moving at 1 mile per hour, you'll move laterally, you'll return to the same point on Earth, roughly like one Earth distance away after a year. That's a little more, like a few thousand miles more. So that means you've spun around, 365 times as you make your way to that point. So we actually, if we're making this assumption that we're just looking at the geometry, geometrically speaking, you're moving 365 times in a loop the size of your circle section of the Earth sphere, mm-hmm. At the Toronto latitude. But you are also, but that circle is moving slowly, so that it moves about its own width or a little more in a year. But if you were to trace midnight or any other time, but let's just say midnight moves around as the sun goes around the Earth. So let's say in December you have the sun at the 6 o'clock position on a clock. So your midnight will be at the 12 o'clock position on Earth. In June, that will have reversed. The sun will be at the 12 o'clock position, and your midnight will therefore be at the 6 o'clock position. Does that make sense so far?
Okay. Sort of.
So basically, if you traced a midnight every day, you waited 24 hours and boom, took one measurement. over and over every 24 hours, boom, 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 you would not be looping 365 degrees or 365 times. Sorry, 360 degrees. You'd be looping 360 degrees only once. So essentially take like almost like two half circles, the lower part of a half circle, and then connect them with a little loop-de-loop. And that's about the shape that we make. That's the shape that our frame of reference moves. If we're talking about, you know, a single time of day moving the course of a year, it goes up to the top once and then down and then loops again. That's it in 1 year. And it just so happens that the star trochoids that we measure, they don't happen in super elongated trochoids, and they don't happen in, you know, more than 1 year time because we're watching them move. No, they happen in exactly the same trochoidal pattern of 1 year for one loop. Zoop, 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 like that every year, which indicates it is our frame of reference measuring the star that causes the trochoid. You see? So it's not more than a year, less than a year. It's every single year. Oh, at around September, there you see it coming out of the trochoid again every time. And the same motion, which he labels in the book A Man's Yearly Path, explains so many of the so-called slight variations that happen where, oh, the sun is just not in the right place. Well, no, we've done this trochoid pattern. We've moved just a little bit in that year. And so on with retrogrades of the outer planets, the P-type planets, the circumbinary planets, that is, after you get past Mars, you know, and the asteroid belt, you have Jupiter and Saturn and so on. They don't do anything extraordinary. They simply just go around. They just go in circles. They don't follow the sun or anything. They go around the inner binary system.
But they also retrograde.
But they appear to do retrograde. And so,
they retrograde when the loop goes backwards, when we go backwards on the loop.
Yeah. So basically, this 1 mile per hour motion of the Earth is proven with every observed planet in our system and the stars. And we can get into stellar parallax and how the observation of the star motion, the star field, also proves the 1 mile per hour motion of Earth. But we don't have to yet. I'd like to just ask you, Ab, if you're okay following us this way. You know, I know it doesn't really go into concave Earth and bendy light.
I'm not into all that. I'm not into concave Earth or any of that stuff.
But what I mean is it okay that we're making assumptions together that, okay, let's just say that we're watching these ball-shaped objects, you know, and we're in like a 3D space. Okay. Is that okay? Can we ask the audience to also please imagine us
way? We can do that. Listen, I have to wrap it up now, unfortunately, because I'm still in the middle of the day here. I know you're early. I was going to extend it if we could have met in the evening, but since we're in the middle of the day, I just wanted to really get a taste of what you guys are up to, where you are, and just let people know where you're going, how long you're going to be here, so they can meet up and maybe chat with you, because a lot of people are interested in this, and of course, my original interest, September Clues and Clues Form.
Well, let's talk later tonight. Are you up for that?
Yeah, I can probably talk later tonight if you're around. For sure. If you want, great. I can pause this broadcast and I'll just put it all in one big package.
Yeah, let's do that.
If you want. Okay, we'll take a break because it is summer here and it's hot. And I assume you just want to keep explaining, or do you want to take any calls later on?
Well, we'd love to get Kayham in too. Because
I'm not sure if we have time tonight. We have to prepare this thing for Minnesota.
Are you in Minnesota there now, or are you somewhere else?
No, we're in Arizona.
So you've got to get to Minnesota.
This is valuable. We should use Ab's show to
No, I'm happy with that.
That's fine.
I mean, what do we have to do? We have to pack a single bag each. Yeah.
You guys are very freewheeling and very able to move quickly. You're very mobile.
Yes, although it would be help if we could get it would be a big help if we could get some small sponsorship here and there, you know. So we're looking for people to be like, oh yeah, you know, come to our university and talk and we'll actually pay for your flight, instead of, you know, having to constantly,
because really
I'm going to have to get a job again after this summer. I'm going to be out of my savings.
I understand.
Moving.
You're pushing sand uphill, really. Without a sponsor, this is very esoteric stuff. It's a very super thin slice. I want to speak in a few more generalities, because when you get too technical, it doesn't matter what you're talking about, 9/11 or engines or anything, then people do tend to doze off. So I do want to make it somewhat interesting as well for the listening audience, but we can reconvene.
Sure.
Later on, if you're available, we have the same. I'll just keep the same connection open, and we can reconvene. I'll put this on pause for now, and
it's fine.
Okay, great.
And maybe if anyone's listening live, because I'm not going to post this right now, they can put some questions into the live stream chat on the Discord server, and I can maybe try and ask you them.
Okay.
And we'll take it from there.
A few questions, they can write them, and you can
yes, I'll ask them,
submit them to us.
You can select questions that actually make sense, if you'd like.
Right.
Well, that makes sense.
Some of them might be a bit too, you know.
Well, you're in the live stream. You're in the Discord server. You can look yourself, too, if anyone has any questions. I'll just tell them to put them in there. You guys both have accounts. You can answer whatever questions you want that are most relevant.
Right.
So, there are a few pictures and whatnot in the live stream chat. I have put a few show notes in the live stream show notes. But if you have any other show notes that are relevant to this discussion, you can put them in too.
Okay.
We have your website, tycoast.info. That's the main website for everything, the book, and I don't know if you put your tour information on there or where you're going.
No.
You should put your itinerary if people want to intersect with you.
We've been doing that at cluesforum.info.
Oh,
if people want to read the Tycoast threads there, we have
we'll put
the tour of the, now there's like a few chapters that Simon has put up, at Tycoast.info for free. And also you can use the 2D model of the system to watch the trochoidal motions, and make sure to use the progressive trace to see how one uniform circle going around another uniform circular motion can create something very beautiful and spirographic, even though it is just circles, if that makes sense. Now, people think, oh, that's so complex, but actually this is exactly what we're seeing in binary stars right now, is they're seeing these motions and going, well, how is this happening? How does, you know, it throws into question Newtonian physics. But they're going to have to deal with that more and more. The mainstream, because now they're saying most of the stars are doing these things. So why can't our system also?
Yeah, why shouldn't it also be like that?
All right.
It's been a pleasure. We will reconvene.
We'll take a break and reconvene and think of some other things to say. And let's speak. We need a few generalities to just get people back into the mainstream of this discussion.
Of course.
Okay, let's take a break.
Thanks for guiding us. Take care.
All right. No problem. Thank you, Hoy, and thank you, Simon. And let's take a break.
Next thing you know, we heard boom.
Okay.
We ran up to the corner and hit right into the World Trade Center.
Can you tell us what kind of an airplane is it?
It had to be a 737 and had to hit the World Trade Center. It was a big, big plane.
You need to take a break.
Okay, and what do you see at this point?
Oh, smoke and screaming and, screaming engines and all the fire engines and police departments are all traveling down that way. Oh, my God almighty, the black smoke all over the place. I hope nobody, there's got to be somebody killed in it. I hope people have went to work. Well,
Tony, we don't have any confirmation from any officials of this happening. Just repeat again, you were walking, you were just going outside.
I was bringing the garbage out to the train engine. When we heard this roaring engine, we looked up and there was the plane. Next thing we know, in a matter of seconds, we heard a boom. We went to the corner and there it was, right in the middle of the World Trade Center.
Where are you standing right now, Tony?
I'm right in the building right now.
Okay, and what do you see at this point?
Oh, people all staring up there looking at us. Oh, my God, the smoke is coming out. Black billow smoke.
Okay, you can see we are physically looking at one of our sky cams right now. We can see billowing smoke from the top of the World Trade Center, Tony.
Yes.
Are there other people that are around you at this point? Is everybody in pretty much of a state of shock?
Oh, of course they are. People are all in shock. The people in the building are in shock. Going out. My God almighty, this is a real disaster. This is worse than the one that hit the Empire State Building back in 1939 or 38, whenever that was.
Tony, how long ago did you witness this?
I'll pick it up, and here we go. Little interlude. You know this one? All right, guys, we're back for the concluding half or quarter of this discussion with Hoi Polloi and Simon Shack, both on tour in America. They're touring the Tycos.info website and complimentary book, and they're going to be appearing at a astronomical type event this Wednesday, July 1911, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Bloomfield, I believe, is that right, Hoi?
Yes, Bloomington. Is basically Minneapolis,
a suburb of beautiful Minneapolis.
It's right by the Mall of America. If you've
I knew
of
it.
Ridiculous thing.
The biggest mall in America. But,
well, I'm told there's bigger ones in Texas, but you know, everything's bigger in Texas.
Everything. So we have on the line, we have you, Hoi Polloi, we have Simon Shack. You're both in the same room at the same time to prove that you are not the same person that often comes up from time to time. There's lots of distractions and lots of people that are trying to discredit, and that's... Mm. But that's just the name of the game. We know. A lot of it is silly. New listeners might not really know how this works, but whenever you're flying over the target, then people take shots at you that are meaningless and just total distractions.
Getting used to it, Ab.
Well, you must have a thick skin by now, for goodness sakes. You've been in the line of fire for 10 years, easy. Maybe longer, 12 years?
Yes, more or less.
So I doubt it bothers you probably too much.
No.
It can't. Fine. It can't bother you.
No, we just keep finding people that are receptive. It's just like that.
So now you're taking on another super big project. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. We also have Kay Ham on the line. I'm sorry, Kay.
Yep.
Okay, hello.
Kay Ham, hi.
Hello. Nice to be here and with such esteemed members of our community.
Nice to see you. I see your icon is 2 feet and a lake. Is that where you are? Are you actually floating in a boat on a lake?
It's a canoe. I'm in a canoe.
Oh, it's a canoe. And you're in Washington State.
That's correct.
Beautiful state. Looks a lot like British Columbia, where I was last year on my Canadian tour.
It's all Cascadia from Northern California and up. Or actually,
Cascadia, exactly. Yeah. The super region.
So we should say that Kay Ham helped edit the book. She's a math teacher. She's able to check our math grammar and punctuation, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, you say you don't read much, and I understand that. That's why we're trying to do audio now. But if you do have a chance, we did try to make the book. I mean, it's not exactly a comic book, but it's quite simple. It's not your average textbook that's very dry and here's a problem there, here's a problem
it's
there.
It's full of colorful illustrations.
It's more like a textbook with all the answers already given. So you can just read through it and sort of understand the thought process behind it. And we spent a good few months just editing it. And I mean, we're still editing it now, but we finally decided, you know, we have to release a first edition. You said it's complimentary. Well, that's not quite true. You know, Simon's asking a small fee for his 5 years of unpaid work.
Oh, no, I didn't mean the book was free. I meant the book complements the website.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
That's what he meant, sir.
And I also compliment you on that, so that's another third meaning of compliment. So, yeah.
Well, funny. You compliment as well in the audio.
Thank you. Yeah, so we have, hopefully we'll have a few books, coming through the mail, in time for the Minneapolis, convention. And, otherwise we'll be there, in these 3 or 4 days, for the first time actually in, for the first time presenting it in public, presenting the Tycos in public.
In America.
Well, I haven't presented it anywhere else, yes.
What about Cui Bono, the podcast?
Oh, yes, of course. Well, we had this podcast in Swedish with Patrick and Martin. Yeah. But otherwise, it's not been presented in public, you know, at public events.
Right, especially as designed for astronomy and so forth.
Sure. So I'm quite excited about it. And as I said before, a bit surprised that they actually let us in there. Because it's looks like it's a quite serious convention, which they have every year. Is that so?
Yeah, apparently it takes place in many different places. It's just by coincidence. It's very near my hometown this year.
Yeah, that was lucky too that it was. Yeah.
Well, it did
close to Minneapolis.
I looked at a few of the presenters, and it seems to be anything astronomically related. I don't know.
Yeah.
Are there seminars there? Are there egg-type head-type people coming? People with pocket protectors and many pens and glasses with tape in the middle? That kind of person?
We'll see, won't we? We'll report to
that,
you live.
That stereotype? Yeah. I would definitely like to, if in one of the afternoons or late evenings, or early evening rather, call in and just maybe get a quick report on the feedback that you're getting from people that are going there for the express reason of learning astronomy and being in astronomical circles, for sure. Yeah, I definitely want to hear about that, for sure. That's the main feedback that would be interesting. The difference, you guys, between media fakery and 9/11 and this is media fakery touches everyone every single day. This, you're breaking apart a much more niche area of science that most people don't think they have any need to understand or can't understand it without an expert around. That's the difference. Everyone has an opinion on the media because we're all bathed in it daily. We all are taking from it more than ever now. And therefore, it's much easier to identify. Oh, you mean I'm being deceived? Oh, tell me how. That's a 5-second conversation for the most part. If people, but I don't think anyone. I can't really challenge you on Mars because I don't think I've ever really seen Mars. I don't think I've ever really looked for it. I don't even know where to look in the sky for it. I know I can get an.
Well, you do get a lot of light pollution there, but Mars is pretty bright. You should be able to see it.
Right now, in these days, if you go out, you will see it. Try going out at midnight, and you'll see Mars because it's pretty close, right in this period of time.
Yeah, well, you guys.
It's almost as close as it ever comes. The last time it was this close was in 2003, 15 years ago. And now in 2018, on July 27, it will be in opposition, which means exactly on the opposite side of the sun in relation to Earth. So we'll be quite bright.
If you went out on the street, I really challenge you guys, when you're at this astronomical convention, I really challenge you to ask some basic questions of the people that come by. For instance, where is Mars in the sky? Did you know what you just said about Mars and how long it's been there and how close, that kind of thing? How many constellations could most people point out? Pretty sure you'd be sadly disappointed by most people's lack of knowledge.
Sure, of course, but that's what we said before.
Yeah.
About the loss of interest in astronomy in the last decades, because astronomy has gone so far, out there. They are out there. They're looking at black holes and dark matter and things that really are so abstract and even probably don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
science fiction matter.
Yeah, science fiction. So people have just, given up understanding astronomers, what they are up to, because they are really, many of them are really, up in the stars and not doing anything that looks even important to us.
Let me bring Kay into this. Kay, what do you think people that you teach, children you teach, what do you think their astronomical knowledge is? Are there any high school courses in astronomy at all? I've never heard of any, and my children are going through high school, so I don't know of any. I don't even know if it's a unit in science.
Yeah, learning about the solar system model starts in like third, fourth, fifth grade. Just part of a general science model that would be here in Washington State. And, you know, depending on the science unit or the curriculum as designated by the state, each state's different. You would, you know, have a different year to focus in on the solar system or things like that.
Okay, but let's even talk, okay, beyond the basic knowledge, and I don't know if I learned it from Television or some educational TV shows, but is there any discussion on the stars, the constellations, how they traverse the sky, that kind of thing? Because I don't remember even learning that.
Yeah, I remember in high school, in a science course, we were looking at Mars, the retrograde of Mars.
Okay.
And the science teacher was trying to get us to figure out why it made the retrograde or the loop instead of just a circle around Earth. It had just a loop-de-loop.
Okay.
And she challenged me to come up with some sort of explanation. And it took all these years, Ab, for me to finally get it. Thank you, Simon. Thank you so much for that. All these years, man.
You can go back to her and say, I got it.
But, right. Kay, and were you aware there were problems with the Copernican model?
It's been a problem, especially with Newton, because he just picked a couple points in the sky for, like, you know, planets, orbits. And he's like, well, it doesn't look like a circle, so it must be an ellipse. And I know his... from my studies in math, that his formulas don't match exactly. And they never did match exactly.
Oh, Kepler, you knew that.
You were saying, right? Kepler.
Yeah. Kepler, right. So, well, I mean, I knew it was a problem. They don't match, but no one seemed to care. Like the formulas these guys are giving you for planets' motions.
Okay, well, that's more than I knew. I don't know if your experience is shared with everyone else, but that's more than I knew, so therefore you had more basic knowledge than I did about astronomy. And I guess there's the confusion with astrology as well. Whatever. That's
probably the most popular form of astronomy.
Yes.
Today.
Yes.
It's just, well, I was born this day, so I'm unlucky in love, or I am lucky in money, or, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, Ab, to say like who's interested in it, I mean, anyone who has anything to do with the calendar, it's going to need, you know, to change. Like, programs are going to need to change in computers. And anyone who does posters in education, I mean, all that's going to – I mean, so you're like – it's kind of like asking, who's talking about red blood cells? I just want to know. It's, you know, you're kind of asking this weird question that it's like, you know, people who are interested in the field are the ones discussing it. Just like, you know, you're in the medical field, look what's going on with the kidney. Hey, isn't that fascinating? Okay. You know, doesn't
yeah. the difference. Yeah.
Would you agree it's a niche audience, though, that we're talking to and talking about?
Of course.
What isn't? Of course it's niche.
Well, I said media fakery is not as niche because I can get an opinion from anyone on it. That's all.
Well, that's got a very wide definition anyway, so yes. I would discuss what the definition is first before we say we're on the same page.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We can't win, can we, Simon? When we focus on something too big, they say, oh, well, you know, it's too big to think about. But when you focus on something that you can easily show is wrong, and small and specialized, they say, well, I don't care. That's too small.
Let's tell the general audience why they should care then. Let's get to that. Why don't we just do a round table, get everyone give an opinion on that. I want to make sure everyone's included because now we have a large group of four here for an audio. Mm-hmm. Why should we care about this?
Well, for the same reason, I mean, for the listeners we have here, ecologists, et cetera, it's really the same thing as the realization I made with September Closed. I took a few steps back from the TV set and I looked from, you know, a neutral view what was actually shown on TV. And you know, I can make the same example about people saying, oh, this is a niche, too much niche for me. Well, when I presented Septembre Clues to Giulietto Chiesa, who is a famous Italian journalist who himself made a movie called Zero, which was supposed to be a conspiracy movie, a 9/11 movie. And when I met him, each time I met him three times after I released Septembre Clues, and he kept saying, well, you know, I have no knowledge in video matters and in cinematography, so I can't give any opinion about it.
Okay.
Doesn't that sound like you yourself now, Ab? You're saying,
yeah, for sure.
I have no knowledge of astronomy, so I don't know what to think about it. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a niche thing. But in the case of Septembre Clues, which was a TV show, you had to, you know, go a little bit into a specialized area, which is video compositing and stuff that they do to deceive us. So, and that wasn't something I had done all my life, but I took this few steps back, tried to read between the lines, the articles about 9/11, and it was a thought process, which I encourage everyone to do in their lives. And the same I have applied to astronomy. It really isn't that different. And okay. I understand that there were many people that said the same thing as Giulietto Chiesa. They said, yeah, I've seen your film, I've seen your movie, but, you know, I can't really judge if what you say has any, you know, value.
Merit, yeah.
Because,
merit, yeah.
Because I have no, I'm not specialized in video fakery, simply. So I just hope this, what I'm saying now, I want to make people, I can understand that there will be people who say, wow, Simon Shack did the September Close, that was a great film, but now he pretends also to be an expert in astronomy. Oh, that should, you know, that probably sounds strange for many people. But the only thing I've done is that I just put my head deep into astronomy for 5 years. And slowly just been doing my homework and reading lots of stuff from different books, from different books from different epochs and all the new astronomy, and try to put these pieces together. It's like putting together pieces of a puzzle. And even if you're not a super expert, you should be able to come to at least a conclusion which makes more sense than what they are telling you. In this case, they've been telling us that the Earth goes around the Sun at 107,000 kilometers an hour. Intuitively, I thought it was a bit strange, but okay, I could, you know, for most of my life, I've accepted it. And everyone has accepted that we are flying at supersonic speeds around the Sun. And we have accepted all of this, and we have had it as cool. I mean, Ab, you can't say that you've never heard of the configuration that they're telling us, that the Sun is in the middle.
Oh no, that's basic knowledge. I don't remember that being a course.
The
no,
planets
I,
go around yeah, the, like a carousel, you know, like a merry-go-round around the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very elegant and simple system, so I think everyone has heard of it.
Yes.
The thing is, when you look closely at how it is supposed to work,
it's not so elegant anymore.
It's not elegant anymore, yeah. And it is actually optically, geometrically impossible. I call it geoptically. It's my own word. You know, I like to coin new words sometimes. When I don't find a proper word, I invent one. And my word that I have invented to explain what I mean by impossible is geoptically impossible. It is geometrically and optically impossible. One of the example was that I just made it before when we started talking about Mars aligning with the Earth and twice conjuncting with the same star, whereas we would have moved laterally by 300 million kilometers. That's simply impossible according to the physics we have on Earth. Mm-hmm. So unless you want to believe that space has another type of physics or perspective, laws, different laws of perspective, then you can't believe that. There must be another configuration. And very, very slowly, I came to the conclusion. Of course, I didn't start from scratch. I went back and got interested in what the Tychonic system was. And I just was lucky. There really was only one possible system which has been discarded, but which sounded reasonable enough. So it was a Tychonic. So I, inspired by what Tycho Brahe had done, I tried to see if there was maybe some elements missing in his system. And yes, there was. Because he stopped at the idea that the Earth is completely immobile and doesn't even rotate every 24 hours. So that's where he, you know, met the wall, and his system didn't really work. It worked partially. But there was something missing, and I feel I found the missing piece of the puzzle, and that's the orbit that Earth does in 25,000 years.
The size of Earth's orbit is, you've calculated to be about Mercury's, roughly, size. But
it's smaller than Mercury's.
But it doesn't go so quickly as Mercury. It takes 25,344 years to make its orbit. Mm. The only thing that goes around the center of Earth's orbit is really Mars. Once in a while will pass through or very close to the center.
Actually, almost exactly
almost
the center.
Almost exactly the center. So if you want to say, well, what does Earth go around? You could say nothing, except Mars pays it a visit now and then.
Exactly. That's in the book, right? Yeah.
If I may answer the question, yeah. I'd say, first of all, one, the premise of the question is false, because I've talked with a number of people now about this, and they're far more interested in this than anything I talked about in media fakery. Oh. And I'd reached a dead end with many people where I'd said, okay, now you understand that much of our news is Hollywood produced, you know, or something like Hollywood, some kind of dirty black ops Hollywood. And they're like, okay, yeah, but why does it matter? I said, why do they do it? The stories are more or less about true things. People die, people commit suicide, dramatic things happen. Why do they fake specific stories? And I say, I can't help you, you know, like they keep it in the conversation. That's how it is. But when I talk about matters of like this so-called cosmic importance, which questions whether we're significant or not in the universe, or if there's a special non-randomness to our system, boy, that makes people really interested. Their antenna come up. They're like, what? Are you saying that we're not random? Oh, well, that actually fits with my feeling, too, that actually Earth does have this amazingly perfect central role in our entire solar system, and it's most conducive to life. And
okay,
to talk
yeah,
about,
that's,
you know,
okay, I like that. Yeah, that,
this
that's,
kind
yeah.
of thing is extremely compelling to people. It dips into... Mm. Warring philosophies that have been going on between so-called Christianity, and let's just simplify it and say Christianity versus science, okay? Right?
Yeah, I like that.
Or forget all the other religions. What's going on in America? Largely, it's Bible-thumping Christianity, you know, saying the Earth is the center versus science, and then the Christians and others in between kind of being tugged and not understanding. Well, maybe it is the Big Bang, but maybe God did it, or maybe it's, you know... This is a really harmonious system, which explains that, yes, we are special in some way. There are a lot of harmonics involved and whole numbers appearing that cannot be explained by a random Copernican toss of the dice. But we are not the center of the universe. We are just one of many, many, many star systems that are very much like us, and
yes,
we can actually see examples
of
it.
So that's what I wanted to add and make it very clear. This has nothing to do with it, you know, going back to religion or thinking that we are in the middle of the center of the universe. The Tychos has nothing to do with that. We are just in the center of a little binary system like many others. The binary systems have been, they keep discovering them. Apparently, there are 85% of all the stars are binary now. And it keeps growing. So when we get to 90, 95%, how can we still believe that only our star, the sun, is a single star? when almost all the other stars are double. So it's just a question of logic. This has nothing to do with any return to religious belief or that the geocentric idea that we are in the center, you know, as God has wished us to be. Nothing to do with that. It's all about logic, about geometry. And I don't even go in my book as far as, you know, theorizing how big the galaxy is or how many galaxies there are. It's not my thing. I just want to do what we at least should be able to do here from Earth. At least get it right geometrically. Those few bodies that revolve around us, which are Venus, Mercury, Mars, Jupiter, and up to Pluto. Pluto has now been declassified, incredibly enough, whereas Pluto is obviously part of our system for reasons that I explain in the book. So we have these few planets around us, and we haven't even been able yet to design how they interact. But I'm very confident that the Tychus does have the solution to this geometric quids, which we've had for hundreds of years or thousands of years. The only problem that we have faced in the last 400 years that a small bunch of very, very influential people just decided that Copernicus was right, and nobody has dared challenge them. So it was just about time that someone did. And I'm sure it would be, I just happen to be the first one who has come to this conclusion, because inevitably, I'm sure if I hadn't done that, someone would have finally started reasoning with the knowledge, with the new knowledge we have now about binary stars, almost everyone, all the stars being binary. Inevitably, someone would have gone back and looked at Tycho Brahe's model. I just happened to be the first one. So, you know, I just want to stay humble about this also.
But, can you just clarify this binary nature of the sun? What is there some, so what do you mean by there could, the sun is possibly binary? What's the binary Mars?
I think I can answer that. I think it's actually part two of my response to you.
Okay.
My first part was
part one too.
Yes. I think cosmology is more important than media fakery to a lot of people. My second answer is the thing that's important, besides, of course, as you said, reaching children, that's more important than any of us old fuddy-duddies that are just kind of, oh, what's going on here? You know, actually, mm-hmm. children will be able to sort out why it's important to them. All our job is just to provide the truth.
Yeah.
They will decide what to do with the truth. It's just our job is not to lie to the next generation, okay?
Mm.
So the reason it is important to me, if I were a child growing up in this time, is it actually questions a lot of how we assume everything is. It's not random. It's actually in the binary configuration, which is the answer to your question.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, everybody in that system has a very specific role. It's not just, there's planets, moons, and one of a billion suns.
Mm-hmm. No. They're all working together.
They're all working together. Let me explain. The Earth is at the barycenter, okay? Then around the Earth is not just any moon, but the moon, which seems to be the drive shaft for the entire system. Every time the moon makes one orbit, that is a single unit, which in different whole number multiples equals the length in time of orbits of all the other bodies, okay? So it's like 4 orbits, 10 orbits, 25 orbits. They all... of the moon. So the moon is not just a moon. It is a very important moon in our system. The Earth and its moon are extremely important. Second of all, the only other planet is Mars. That's just it. And Mars isn't doing what Earth is doing. It's in a sort of binary relationship with the sun. So these two, how that works is the sun goes around the Earth every year, once a year, and Mars takes about twice as long. And it will go around the sun as the sun goes around the Earth. So what will happen is Mars will go around Earth as well. But it just takes a great deal more time, and it will do these loop-de-loops in a certain pattern. So the only other planet in our in this internal system is doing this. That also, the Sun has two moons, Mercury and Venus, and Mars has two moons, Phobos and Deimos. They also share relationships with one another. The orbital periods are in ratios to the other sets' diameters. So, for example, Mercury and Venus have relationships to Phobos and Deimos that are reciprocal, okay? So you not only have the Sun with its two moons, Mercury and Venus, you also have Mars with its two moons, Phobos and Deimos, and then you have the Earth and its moon, and that's it. That is the configuration of the
I've
system.
I've never heard of Phobos and Deimos.
Yes, most people
ever.
Don't even know that Mars has these two moons. I mean, they forget that they have.
That's right, but neither had I heard of them when I started this research. I discovered it's Phobos and Deimos.
Who discovered them?
It was Asafol in 1800 something. I mean, quite recently, you know, in terms of knowledge, astronomical knowledge. Tycho Brahe had never seen them, for instance. In the 16th century, no one had seen.
Asafol, you say? Asafol.
Yes.
1877.
Yeah.
See, I'm reading your book.
Yeah, good. So, yeah, I remember. No, I wasn't sure it was.
It's a good book to just read a page or two at a time. You don't have to read the whole thing in one sitting.
No, but the only thing, how you described very well this, but you just forgot to say the simplest thing that I wanted to know. What is binary? Binary only means two objects dancing around each other, so their orbits intersect. Okay.
Okay.
It's almost like two people holding hands and dancing in circles. Mm-hmm.
So they have a relationship with each other. They don't have to be equal. One doesn't have to be a sun, the other.
Right.
So they are. They have a relationship that you can define. So,
yes.
But
now you said something important, very important. You said they don't have to be equal size. They do not need to be equal size
In orbital period.
Or orbital periods. So, and that's a very important point because the first thing any astronomer will tell me, and it actually happened once when I met an astronomer who came to visit me in my house, he said, "Oh, Simon, but Mars is far too small to be the companion of the Sun."
Yes.
Well, so that triggered me to look at I just looked at another famous binary system, which is called Sirius. But Sirius, you know, it's the brightest star in our sky. It's the absolutely brightest star in our sky. It's called Sirius.
It's in the Orion constellation, no?
No, it's Sirius. Well, anyway,
it's a dog star.
It's a very important star. It was for the Egyptians. It marked the beginning of the year and so on.
Anyway, it's really bright.
It's very, very bright. It's the brightest. And that was also discovered pretty late that it had a companion, because that companion is so small that it's almost invisible. You need really a good telescope to see that companion. So I looked up how small is it, this companion, Sirius B, how small is it in relation to the big star? Well, I found that it is as small as Mars is in relation to the Sun.
The 0.4881
practically identical,
0.4888
practically proportionally identical, because Sirius B is 0.4888% of its big sister, and Mars is 0.4881 of the Sun. So no one can say that such a system can't exist with such a small companion, because we can see it with our own eyes looking up at Sirius.
Not only that, but they've recently confirmed that Sirius has a Sirius C at the barycenter, just like Earth.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's basically a sister system, and it's within our telescopic range.
Yeah. So Sirius may be a twin family of our system, maybe. Who knows? Maybe someday in the future we'll discover that Sirius is some kind of twin of our solar system. But anyway, so is binary clear for you now, Ab?
More clear.
What does it mean?
More clear. Let me get Kayham in here, so she can answer the question for herself at least. What do you think the importance of this whole model is? Is it more important than media fakery?
I guess for myself, it's kind of a mix of two. Because if you think about it, right, we're being scanned in a huge way about things like satellites and getting to space.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Hold on. Kitty. All right. Sorry,
Kitty in the canoe?
Yeah. She doesn't want to get out. Okay. But we're being scanned. And I think this is really cool because Simon's model will show obviously how we've been scammed, like to get to the moon or, you know, distances are now different, like to get to Mars, especially like how much fuel did you really use? Because according to this model, it says you should have been, you know, this is your fuel requirement, but this model was,
how are we as a society, civilization, how are we being scammed? How does this affect any of our day to day ways of looking at things? You're giving really specific,
Okay, just say taxes, right? To do fake satellites in space, you have to pay the government more taxes. And, you know, you think one technology is happening, but it's not.
Mm-hmm. What does that have to do with the Tycho's model, though? What does it matter what the model is? That's what I'm trying to get. What is the significance of Simon's work to the greater masses? Just money?
I would say that it can prove we're being scammed in a big way. Mm-hmm. That would be that's what I'm looking forward to. Mm-hmm. Showing, look. That makes sense.
If I may point out something in relation to that question of yours, Ab. Mm-hmm. And also going back to what I said before, that I just happened to be the first one to have found the proper geometry of a system. But maybe I just don't happen to be the first one. I had an unfair advantage because I've been studying for 10 years or more, mm-hmm. or at least 10 years. I've been studying NASA and this big force that is a space travel.
Yeah.
So I had an unfair advantage in relation to anyone else, because I knew that there was no truth in what I could read from NASA material.
Yes.
And
let me interrupt quickly. That is one of the big revelations of Clues Form, by the way. If anyone is looking for any truth about NASA, Clues Form's second biggest section has got to be on space and NASA.
Exactly. And I would like to remind all listeners of this, that it's not because I want to, applauses for that, but we really have done a good job, I think, at Clues Forum, and probably the most comprehensive debunking of NASA, simply. Mm-hmm. So it's not that I want, more credit for it now, but I just want to remind everyone that it was Clues Forum. We were the first to really went very deeply, organized it nicely. You know, beyond the people who already knew that the moon hoax was fake, mm-hmm. we needed to go further. I started looking at the space shuttle many years ago.
Yes, yes, the magic vault.
And from there on, we went on, and nothing could stop us because
satellites was the hardest. I think it was the last.
Yeah.
It was like the victims of space.
Yes.
Finally go. Oh, wait a minute! It doesn't make sense to spend $3 billion to send up something that will possibly just peter out when a little rock hits it.
So now I return
or run out of gas.
I have to return the question to you, Ab. Do you think it's important, this work that we have exposed in NASA scam? Does it mean anything?
Oh, that definitely. That is easy for me to understand as important. Okay. Absolutely. I just am missing the link between, and I was going to ask you about that. What is the link between exposing NASA and the scam that it is, whether or not they really are stealing all that money or if that is just another red herring that they're taking billions? I don't know because I don't audit them because we're used to getting numbers that are ridiculous and maybe not even true from the quote-unquote government. But the question is, how does the Tycho's model, how can it be linked to all the great work Clues Forum has done on exposing the fakery of NASA?
I have a answer, maybe, possibly.
Okay.
The way I've made the connection, and this is why I said when we first started making a thread on Clues Form. Mm-hmm. Why would we put Tycho's on the Clues Form exactly?
Yes,
what is the point of this? Mm. It basically had to do with the fact that, as you mentioned, first of all, Simon is and a very interesting person, and his stuff is interesting. We should listen when he has something to say, whether we agree or not. But really, you know, it just kept coming up. Who is this Einstein fellow? Who is this Newton fellow? How is it that they got away with certain things getting promoted, certain physics, certain explanations for things being in the mainstream? And they use those particular gods of science, as we call them on the threads,
yes,
to promote their physics and their understandings of how they're, we couldn't get into outer space until we figured out how to spin rockets a little, and then it could go a little further, you know. Just nonsense, just absolute hogwash that most people don't understand, to explain that, oh yeah, they can actually achieve these long distance probes that go to the edge of our solar system and so on, to get data that we're already getting from telescopes and stuff
okay.
like that.
Okay.
So yeah. One connection there is that, the binary stuff, I mean, within astronomy, there's already things that greatly question Newtonian physics and Einstein. I mean, Einstein and Newton have really already been, many of their hypotheses have been disproven over and over.
Yes.
But this really is quite a challenge for NASA, because we're not just saying that Newtonian gravity doesn't explain our system. We're saying that it doesn't explain any system.
Yes.
It doesn't explain 85% of the stars and more. So basically, they have to go back to the drawing board. And when they're saying that they're using those physics to send little satellites out and like on little reconnaissance missions and mm-hmm. poofing here and there, and we can't actually see them, or we can see them, but they don't actually look like what they say they are, they look like bright lights instead of a reflection that goes in Earth's umbra or anything like that. You know, that's a huge challenge, but it takes a little processing of the information to understand why, the things that are out there are not stuff that is man-made. That why the stuff that we're looking at is probably not satellites, and why we can't actually do it with the, so there's a connection there between debunking NASA and its rocketry and space stuff, and also how they say they're putting things way, 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 way far out from Earth to prove the Copernican system. But here's a question. If they can actually do that, why, if NASA can send probes to the edge of the solar system, why don't they just send one straight up, perpendicular to the sun's ecliptic, and look down
on the
system and take a video?
Yeah, just same reason why we don't have a picture of the Earth from space, a real one.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why?
Just send us a YouTube video of looking down on the North Pole from, let's call it
miles up.
50, 100 AUs away, Earth-Sun distances, or 1,000, which is what they say.
But
we know why they can't.
They can't.
But how about a couple hundred miles up? Forget AUs. How about a few hundred or a few thousand miles, if possible? Mm-hmm. Why don't we have a picture of that?
Right.
Exactly.
So there's connections there in the sense that even if it's arbitrary where satellites are in space because, they're relative to Earth, and so you can have Earth going 107,000 kilometers an hour, or you can have it going 1.601169 kilometers an hour, as we have in the Tychos, and they say, that doesn't matter. But NASA people think it matters. NASA mm-hmm. thinks it matters. They will say, well, our JPL friends, Jet Propulsion Lab friends, they have these satellites that they just sent out, and you need to reconcile JPL data with, with your system. Well, no, we don't, because you haven't actually sent that. You have invented that based on your assumptions.
Yeah.
Now, I'm still not totally clear, but let's try one more question, because everyone understands NASA fakery that understands media fakery. They seem to be pretty easily linked. There's so many overlaps and connections. It's a super easy thing to equate. They're very much overlap. So for instance, what do you think the purpose is, if any, of, for instance, NASA constantly harping on Mars and talking about Mars as and probing Mars and sending a Mars rover up, all things that most fakeologists think is phony, phony information in every way. So why do they only harp on Mars? Because we're told it's the nearest planet? Or are they trying to distract from your Mars binary theory with the sun? What do you, is there any purpose?
Are you asking questions that actually have anything to do with the Tychos? I mean, I'm kind of confused why.
Well,
why you
I don't
frame
see
it
your.
This way.
Well, because I'm trying to figure out. I still am trying to link Tychos with NASA fakery.
Why? What's the importance of that for you?
Well, because we just discussed that it was a very important part of Clues for.
Well, okay, so let's put it this way. I asked you before, you are concerned that NASA is scamming us. So,
Yes, so
you understand, obviously, that the Copernican system, which has been, like, you know, canonized for hundreds of years, they can't go back and now say, oh, no, Copernicus was wrong, and all our calculations for going to space.
So you're saying that
Copernicus
is so you're saying that you need the Copernicus system for everything NASA says
that's what they say all the time. Anyone will tell you. The few people I've seen responding, on Tychos, the few Tychos discussions I've seen on the internet, they will very quickly say, well, how can you come up with a new configuration of a solar system when we are already going precisely to all these asteroids? We're landing on asteroids now. We're landing on Mars. We're landing. So for many people, the fact that the Copernican system is untouchable is due to the supposed NASA activity. So the thing is, I realize perfectly well that my Tychos model will be even more difficult to diffuse among people than September Clues, because much harder. Because here we are talking about, you know, if anyone would start accepting or important people would say, yeah, the Tychos model is true, then that is the last nail in the coffin for NASA. Then it really crumbles. It has to crumble. Would you think that would be interesting to see?
I think it would be.
Imagine if three Nobel Prize important people say, oh, yeah, Simon Schreck is right. What do you think would happen with NASA? You know, it won't happen. I'm not saying I'm dreaming of this.
But
I don't have crazy dreams. I'm not.
I still need better links to figure out. Okay, what is it that NASA? If NASA's official biggest story is that they went to the moon, do we agree on that? That is the most blatant, obvious lie that they've ever created. It's not the shape of the Earth.
And it's also the most disbelieved. There are many people who will accept that the moon hoax was a hoax.
Yes.
Whereas many, many, many people, I mean, almost no one will accept that NASA doesn't go into space at all.
Right.
Yeah, I would say space. NASA's biggest lie is they get into space. That's everything.
That's the lie.
Yeah.
That's the lie.
Rockets, everything. Are you saying everything before they say they went to the moon, launching rockets, that was a bigger lie?
Launch, but mm-hmm. how far do they get? Do they get mm-hmm. past the atmosphere? That's the question.
Okay, but
the answer is no, they don't.
Right.
That's the thing. They don't get past the atmosphere, so they've never done any space exploration.
Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to link that in my mind to the Copernican model. I'm trying to create the links. You have to make it obviously really simple for me. Why? What is it about the Copernican system that allows NASA to say they have been to space?
I see what you mean now.
How does the Tycho system completely negate their?
They want to keep the Copernican system for their NASA purposes. They don't need that. The problem is that the Copernican system has been, you know, its case closed for the scientific community.
Mm-hmm.
And the scientific community works with NASA. So it's a whole, you know, this big family of people who work in this area. they, no one can allow themselves to doubt the configuration, the Copernican configuration. It's not that the Copernican configuration is more apt for flying rockets in space.
So you're saying that because we have a whole industry that believes in a false system, then they are they are compromised, so they are going to agree to other less important false systems because they are officially compromised, because they're not using their heads, the data doesn't match the model perfectly like the Tycho system. So we have a whole group of people that we know can cover for what they know is a wrong system. And therefore, they can be used for all future baloney, solar, / space lies. Is that what you're...
I'm not trying to, play gotcha with you, but it sounds to me like you're trying to hear an answer that will confirm or deny an assumption that you don't want to share. Like, what is it that you're...
I'm trying to figure out how this links
why do you need that link?
Because
I don't understand.
Because that I thought that was an important thing to understand, because I'm trying to figure out why Tycho's, why would people cover up knowing that the Tycho's model is a better model than the Copernicus model? Because Tycho's has been out for a long time. It's not new. Simon has tweaked it. Because I believe that your main tweak is that Earth, instead of being completely stationary and in the center of all the orbits, Earth is actually moving.
Okay, I got it. Let me try to answer
that. That is the main tweak. Is that right?
That makes sense. Yes. So I think what I heard you ask, this is more difficult than I thought. I didn't know we'd spend an hour just on this question. But I thought... Yes, it is your show.
You're trying to convince me, not everyone else, because
we're not trying to convince you. We're pretty darn close.
You're trying to
we're hoping that you'll understand it.
Yes, you're trying to give me comprehension.
Yes. So basically, it sounds like you think that we're trying to say there's a cover up. I think there is not necessarily a cover up. I say, ask a Copernican, why do you think this is important? Because I don't think it is. Like, we've been confused by that ourselves when we've brought it to somebody and they say, oh, no, we can't look at it because it can't possibly be. And we ask, well, why? And they can't answer. They say, well, I just don't have time. I just don't have time to look at it. So the question that you ask is, why is it important that Copernicans believe in their system so much? Ask a Copernican or ask a heliocentrist, why is this so important to you? You know, that's maybe the important thing here that's going on is it's a question that we're trying to ask, and we're confused ourselves why people have glommed onto this and held on to it other than authoritarianism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Add on to that. This is like what Simon is doing with the solar system. He's joined by several other people who are trying to get the truth out about the universe. We actually, there's like Ken Wheeler and his studies on magnetism. I mean, we live in a completely different universe than people think. We've been hoodwinked. I think the important part for Tycho's to me is that we need to find out exactly who we are by where we are. And we don't even know that yet. We don't even know where we are yet. So I think this is an excellent starting place.
So Tycho's explains that. That's a philosophical, endless question.
It's also a philosophical question, but if you want to go into the philosophy, I can tell you this much about the Copernican system, which may be one of the reasons why they love it, the powers that be. You ask any philosopher or historian of astronomy, he will tell you or she will tell you that once the Copernican system became accepted, it made us, I mean, the world, we Earthlings much less significant because we became a little, one of the many planets that go around the sun. We weren't in the middle anymore. We are just, an anonymous little ball.
A speck of dust. Yes.
A speck of dust.
An infinite universe. Yes.
It's not me saying that. I've just been reading that kind of stuff and many people see it that way. So in that sense, we can liken this to the networks, you know, the network, as I call it.
A network, I always like that.
The networks wish always to, you know, oppress and also either, you know, to scare us with their fake atomic bombs or with fake Cold Wars.
Yes.
Fake terror. Mm-hmm, they want always to, you know, oppress us and feel us and make us feel anguished. And maybe it could go into that kind of category of fakery. I mean, they want to keep lying about us, about the Copernican system, because it was conveniently decided 400 years ago. And maybe it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the same people in 400 years. People, there are different people at the top. But they kept this lovely Copernican elegance thing, and they've built NASA upon it, upon this thing. So NASA is intimately correlated to it. So they can't just say, oh yeah, maybe this researcher has a good idea. Maybe we're not going around the sun after all.
I think another reason they can't say it is because the Copernican system is how they've proved or disproved that they are arrogant. You see, so if you take that away, it's like you're calling them arrogant, because they say, "Oh, see, we placed the sun at the center, not Earth. So we're quite humble, and you know, we've placed ourselves in an infinitesimally unimportant place in the universe. So as you can see, we're quite humble. We're quite humble." If you say, "Look, you don't have to be that humble. You know, there's actually some very interesting things going on in our system." That's like telling them you've been absurd. You've been acting absurdly. It's calling emotionally.
Yeah,
it's disturbing to them.
Too,
I think.
Yeah, interesting outlook. Yeah.
But I just think of that from an emotional perspective, because I don't see any reason that we have to link the Tychos to those things. But when we introduce the Tychos, that's actually the thing we get back. Is like, oh, but the wouldn't that mean NASA is wrong? We say, well, I mean, NASA is, but I don't see. You know, it's like why should we have to also? I mean, luckily we already have disproven NASA over and over, but why should we have to as well? I don't know, Ab. You know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I've got about 40 minutes left, and so I want to make sure we cover as much as we can that you want to cover, more than what I know to ask you. So I want to use this time efficiently. So what other points do you want to bring up? Does Kay want to bring up? What are some of the essentials that you want to bring across over the airways right now?
Well, I hope people caught on to the moon's true synodic period. I think that's important. One quality of moons that Simon is asserting is that, well, they're all tidally locked. We see Mercury and Venus tidally locked to the sun. They always show the same face to the sun. Similarly, our moon always shows us the same face. That's why we don't ever see the other side.
Why is that? That's very important. That might be a question I can actually understand. Why do we only see one side?
We don't have an explanation, which is why it's important to talk about. The Copernican explanation is gravity, which I find inadequate now that we've shown that, oh no, maybe gravity isn't, you know, the explanation. It's not that the moon is egg-shaped and so therefore kind of, you know, tugs at the Earth in that particular gravity way. It's, for me, Newtonian gravity, besides gravity that pulls us to Earth, that's the only gravity I say, yes, that's gravity. The other gravity, the gravity that makes planets go around and supposedly causes, you know, everything to be around a particular center, I think that's just absurd. Because all the planets are off-center. They don't orbit, you know, the largest gravitational mass. They just orbit what they orbit. And so what we're seeing with all these things, the tidal locking, the orbits being whole number ratios and being,
yeah. Yeah, maybe, know, should, relationships maybe that should be explained why I found that they are whole integer multiples of the moon's period. So the moon's true synodic period is 29.22 days. which is not exactly what we see, because we see it's been a bit longer. We see the moon returning, facing the sun in 29.5 days, 29.53. Hmm. But the 29.22 value was known by the Mayas, for instance, just, you know, as an aside. I mean, but it's very interesting that the Maya knew about that. The, my 29.22 value is something that I came to by taking into account the small motion of Earth, you see? So that's why I came to that precise number. Now, I multiply 29.22 by 4, and I get Mercury's period. And Mercury is the moon of the sun. It's a moon of the sun. It's not a planet. I multiply it by 20, and I get Venus's period.
Yeah, so, like, for example...
You see, so it's all... Just to explain,
I just
because...
To let me finish. Do the calculation.
About the... Yeah, because the moon is then the... really appears to be the driving shaft of the whole system.
Yes.
This is in the middle of the system.
Just for example, if you take Mercury's multiple, it's 4 times the moon's orbit.
Yeah.
That's 29.22 times 4, and you get 116.88. Hmm. And 116.88 days, like Earth days, is how long it takes Mercury to orbit.
Hmm.
Exactly 4 times the moon's orbit. Also, the sun, 12.5 times. And Mars, exactly twice that, indicating they're a binary pair. So, for example, you take the sun, you have 29.22 days for the moon times 12.5, and you get its orbital period of 365.25 days.
Huh.
With Mars, you take the 29.22 and times it by 25, and you get its orbital period of 730.5 days, and so on. It is this way for every planetary body, Jupiter, Neptune,
all the way to Pluto,
Uranus, all of them.
Yeah.
They all orbit in whole number multiples of 29.22.
Whereas the official numbers are slightly different. So they don't look, you can't, it doesn't, jump into your face.
You can't see the pattern because they, are you saying they obscure them a little bit so you can't see patterns?
I think they're just confused. I don't think it's a big cover-up, personally. Now, Simon may disagree, but I think
Simon is
someone who just uncovered this stuff. I don't think that they're, secretly hiding.
I agree with that. It's not necessary that
they're
covering this up.
I think they just didn't figure it out.
I consider myself maybe very, very lucky because I just had this intuition about the Earth's motion, which is really something which, I don't know how I came to that, but I was reasoning around, it was mainly because we know that our North Star changes in time, Our North Star isn't always the same. Now we have Polaris, and in 12,000 years, approximately, we'll have Vega. And the Copernican model, the Copernican theory, explains this, or tries to explain it, by saying that Earth wobbles. It also wobbles. It has a third motion. And I talked about that earlier on. That wobble has been disproved. So the Copernican theory can't explain why we are changing the North Stars. And it can't explain the equinoctial precession. It's huge. It's a huge problem. But these discoveries have been made by small researchers like myself, independent people, who still you've never heard of them. I found them because I've been really digging on the web and found these few people who have determined very seriously and very with really proper calculations and proof that Earth doesn't wobble. So if Earth doesn't wobble, there's no explanation for the fact that the stars go backwards by 50.3 arc seconds every year. Because that's what they do. They kind of drift, they slip backwards by 50.3 arc seconds every year. It's the whole star field. So it's like, well, what is that? In my Tycho's model, it is very simply due to us moving at 1 mile per hour. And we are moving in a clockwise fashion. We are moving in the opposite direction of the sun and of all the other planets. We are the only body that revolves clockwise.
Huh.
And let me tell you immediately when I realized that, wow, we are actually orbiting clockwise. Well, that's strange, Simon. That can't be right. Well, soon after, I found that very recently, in 2012 or something, astrophysicists, you know, the really high-level astronomers had finally discovered in the last few years that many, in many binary star systems, they have started finding planets going in the opposite direction of their star, of their host star. So this thing is observed. There are planets that go in the other direction of their star. So, you know, we are not an exception in this case. I mean, we were not an anomaly. It is observed that there are planets that go in the opposite direction of the star. So, you know, as I said also earlier on, if I had done this 20 years ago, I would not have had this modern elements of discovery to complete this theory of mine. Now, it's really a wide-spanning research I've done, because I've gone back to the Mayas and to some ancient Indian astronomers also. They had very similar systems to Tycho Brahe, like Patanisamanta.
Yeah, Patanisamanta had an identical, you know, he was the greatest naked-eye astronomer India has ever known.
Yes.
And he, completely independently of Tycho's work, also came to the same model. With Mars going around the sun as the sun goes around the Earth.
And Mars and sun intersecting.
Yes, intersecting.
I will never say that enough times. They intersect. And this intersecting motion was, that's why Tycho Brahe was ridiculed for many, many years. Until 400 years later, there's a guy called Margolis who actually noticed that it was just an illusion. They would never crash. Mars and the sun never crash. Just as binary systems, they don't crash. They just revolve around each other, as I described before. So it was just because no one knew about binary systems that Tycho was left out of the room with that model he designed. And now, of course, you can see, I don't know, it's pretty obvious that they are dissing Tycho Brahe and just saying that he was a party man and he had a dwarf under his table and just making fun of this man.
Mm-hmm.
Who, really okay, cool. he was from nobility, all right, so maybe that's suspicious for some, but I mean, he was a real observer with his guys. I don't think you can doubt his work. His work is immense, enormous, and considered to be the most accurate ever made. So,
and yet his name is not a household name by any stretch.
No. I mean, who has heard of him?
You know, the closest we have, Copernicus. That's the closest name we have. People heard. Oh, I've heard of that. Or Galileo. I've heard of Galileo.
And in spite of Tycho Brahe being the master of Kepler, Kepler became super famous. Kepler, I know everybody knows Kepler, but Kepler was just an assistant who came to help him. What was his job? Well, Tycho asked Kepler to ask him to help him with calculating Mars. The what Mars was doing, because that was a problem. The big problem that Tycho never managed to solve was Mars, because it made strange movements in the sky. And of course, if you see my Tycho's model, you'll understand why he wasn't able to understand it, because Mars is doing a spirographic motion around the system. And Kepler was, well, he was clever enough to mathematically find a solution for it. And so he found that with maths, he could make this, explain these strange motions by saying that the orbits were elliptical. But that's just a trick of mathematics that he did. You know, it works on paper, but it's not reality.
Okay.
The orbits are not elliptical. Oh, the idea that the orbits are elliptical, Ab, let me tell you, this should be really easy to understand.
Okay.
Is because since we are moving slowly within all the orbits of the other objects around us, at times we will be going in the same direction of any planet we look at. At times we'll be going the opposite direction of any planet we look at. So we will see that planet or
the
sun.
So it stretches out the circle.
accelerating and decelerating. So if we look, if we put, you know, a dot on a piece of paper, it will end up in an elliptical shape.
Yeah, we think we're mapping an ellipse instead of accounting for Earth's slow.
It's pretty simple to understand, in fact. It's simple to understand why Kepler came to the conclusion. It doesn't correspond to reality. Because reality has to do with optics, and that's why Mars can realign with the same star in 1.5 years. It's because the actual
motion of Mars
is completely different than that Kepler concluded.
Kepler was kind of on the right track. He made a diagram called the movement of the star Mars. But he threw it out ultimately, which is a shame because he actually figured out Tycho's movement that Tycho had needed.
He made a drawing which is practically exactly what came out when we made with Patrick the animated simulation machine.
For whatever reason, Kepler didn't want to use that and decided to side with the church's sun worship. And so, okay, we'll place sun in the center again, and then we'll have to stretch everything out into ellipses. We'll have to have planets accelerating and decelerating and all that. But you don't have to do that. If you don't assume the sun is at the center, everything gets much more simpler. It's all uniform circular orbits.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring Kay into it. I want to keep Kay going. I've got about 25 minutes left, so we want to let everyone know that Simon and Hoy will be in the Minneapolis, Minnesota area for an astronomy conference. I put that in the show notes at the Discord server.
We'll also be giving a free and open talk at the University of Minnesota August 23rd.
Okay.
Which is Thursday. Thursday, August 23rd at 6:30 p.m. I can't tell you what parking will be. It looks like you might have to. It might be better to take the light rail or bus or do a, you know, whatever. But anyway, August 23rd at 6:30 p.m. We'll be giving a free and open talk. You don't have to pay to go to this convention if that's, you know, a problem for you. Just come to our talk. We'll have free refreshments and we'll just explain the model. Have a question and answer session.
And you are at the invitation of any particular person there at the university?
No. We simply got the room. And
it's just a room.
They said, "Oh yes, you can use the physics building, you know, if we have space." So we're in the astrophysics building at Tate.
Can't you get anyone officially from the university to at least sit in and comment? that seems ironic that you may as well have just got a room at the local hotel.
It's strange. We tried introducing it to a few people there, but anyway, let's get Kay. Kay's opinion.
Kay, go ahead. How are you?
Hello. Just want to also communicate about the event coming up, ALCON 2018. It's at the Hilton Minneapolis St. Paul Airport Mall of America.
Yeah. Are you going?
So yes, I will be there also. Oh.
Wow.
Yes, that is July, 11th? So
yes.
That it starts...
It starts like after lunch on the 11th and then goes for the 12th, 13th, and 14th.
And Kay, will you be manning the Tycho's booth with the two boys?
Yes, we are vendors as well as registered attendees. So we will be doing a little bit of boothing and then, going to different lectures and listening to things. But if I may back up for a minute, you said like who's interested in this stuff,
yes.
You know, or what kind of people are we seeing like with pocket protectors and stuff? But
yes.
These are guys with the telescopes. It's if you go to ALCON 2018 and you look at the different field trips you can go on, they're all to observatories in these giant like 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet, 5 feet, you know, up to how many feet telescope. It's crazy. These giant, super expensive devices. So these are the watchers. You know, these are the guys who are watching the sky for us. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah.
Please make sure you try and get some on recorded reactions. I'd really want to hear what the people in the know have to say. They're more important to me than my opinion.
We'll do our best with
that. Bad.
These are the guys.
Your opinion is more important to us.
Well, I would if I was. I really want to hear the people that are indoctrinated in this. I want to hear. I think they're really important to get the feedback from.
Yeah.
It's important for us to get the feedback.
I'll be happy to talk with anyone, really. And obviously, to meet these people is exciting. I don't know what to expect myself, but I'm sure it won't be easy. And, you know, in any quick form of conversation, because it takes a little time to get into what I've been. I mean, the book is 220 pages, so for 2030.
Yeah.
For any astronomer, I think I'm looking forward to see if I can illustrate in maybe 5 minutes to someone who is into the field, the basics of it and see what he says, because all astronomers will be familiar at least with the Tychonic system. Which is, you know, is quite famous in astronomy.
And but so it didn't work quite well without the moving Earth, right?
No, exactly. It didn't work quite well, but it worked well enough to have been, it was actually the most respected system even after Copernicus came onto the scene. Mm-hmm. It's remained the most respected or believed, whatever you call it, system in the world for many years after Copernicus came with his model. So if you read the history of those years, the Copernican system wasn't accepted immediately. It took a long time. You know, there was a big, big change to imagine that the Earth was moving at incredible speeds and that now suddenly the stars were extremely far away. That was something that Tycho Brahe laughed about. He said, no, this can't be true. Because Tycho had been looking at the stars and planets for all of his life, and he couldn't possibly imagine that, you know, we had, at the time he could see only as far as Saturn, of our planets. And then he said, well, off the Saturn there is nothing, absolutely nothing at all for ages and ages of kilometers, for millions and billions of kilometers. And that the first star is at 4.2 light years. And there is a complete void between Saturn and the first star. And he said, it just doesn't sound right to me. So there was lots of resistance against the Copernican system when it first came out. And so every astronomer know about Tycho Brahe. It's just that they say, well, there were some problems there. He said that, I mean, the worst thing was that Tycho didn't even believe that we revolved around our axis every day. So that meant that all of the stars would revolve once around us every day. And, you know, I don't think that's very plausible.
Do you want to, since we're talking about the people who observe the stars, do you want to try to make one last point about stellar parallax and how we determine?
Yeah, well, maybe briefly, you know, if it's a bit technical also.
Yeah, it's a bit technical.
But stellar parallax, well, I try to do my best to make it simple. Today, there are many, I mean, the European Space Agency has been collecting stellar parallax data for years. And they say they have satellites with the telescopes on board. But I think they just do it from ground-based telescopes, but let's not go there. They have all these catalogs the cataloging how much the nearby stars move, you know, how much parallax they have. And in those catalogs, you can find roughly 25% of the stars positive. That means they are moving in a certain direction. Then the another 25% negative, moving in the opposite direction, which is impossible because if we are going around the sun in one direction, we won't ever have a negative parallax.
They should all be moving the same way, right? Yeah.
They can only move the same way. So, but they have 25 positive and 25 negative, or 29 positive and 25 negative, okay? But, and the rest, the remaining 50% almost, zero parallax. So, the distribution is roughly 25, 25, 50. Positive, 25, negative, 25, 0, 50. Which doesn't make any sense at all under the Copernican system. But it does exactly, it can be very neatly and simply explained in the Tychos. Because that is exactly what would be expected. About 25 positive, because when the sun is in the winter time on one side of us, we watch the stars in a certain direction. In the summer, we look in the other directions, and we would have 25 negative, or I mean, what did I say? I mean, positive and negative. And the remaining 50 will be zero, because since we're moving very slowly, always in the same direction, okay, for hundreds of years, the stars that we look that are in front of us in our direction of travel will never have any parallax because we are going towards them. They're not going to move against the more distant stars. You know, they measure the closer stars against the distant stars and then they see if they have moved a little. Well, the stars that are in front of us, meaning in front of our direction of travel, they will never have any parallax at all. The same, the stars behind us, you know, imagine we are traveling in a car. Instead of being on Earth, we are in a car. If we see, all right, if in our front window a star, it will never have any parallax. If we look at the rear window, that star will also have zero parallax, which means 25 plus 25, 50. So exactly what is in the catalogs. 50% of the stars have zero parallax, 25 positive and 25 negative. So with a simple graphic, I show that in my book, I show that the Tychos explains what is observed. So I'm not even, you know, negating the work that astronomers or these people do in these observatories. I'm just showing why they see this, and they obviously, I don't believe they are all, you know, in on it and make up those figures.
No, but astronomers are disturbed by their own findings often because it doesn't fit the Copernican system and they don't know what to do with it. Lately, they've been saying, well, the negative parallax must be error. We'll just throw that out. Just like Einstein threw out the ether and just like they're trying to throw out other things. They don't know what to do with this data, but it all makes sense in the Tychos. It all adds up, finally.
Are there any problems with the Tychos system that you've encountered? That are there any anomalies that you can explain?
I will confidently say no. Not that I know of this time. I am absolutely satisfied that the Tychos works perfectly. And if anything pops up, I will be the first one to say, "Oh wait, here I maybe want to correct this." Mm-hmm. But this moment in time, the Tychos is really the only possible system that I can imagine explains our cosmos.
And really, the Copernicus.
I'm that cocksure. Please excuse me, but I really am. Yeah.
Well, do you have a section in your book that says if you have any errors, if you find any errors in this model, please contact me.
He says that at the end, he says, well, he doesn't reach out. He just says, I'm happy to correct this. You know, I'm hoping that this will spark new research and that we'll find.
I mean, I got the website as well where I can do such announcements. I mean, it's not that I've done the book and then I run away. And here can I answer any questions. I'm open to answer any questions. Unlike some people say on the web that I don't accept the questions. It's just that right now I'm a bit busy trying to, diffuse.
We're trying to talk with, as you say, the people. Important people. So.
Well, the people that are, this is their livelihood or their studies, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, this is just to say that I will be more open. I mean, when I have more time, I'll be very open to to continue answering any questions. It's just that right now I've been, I haven't been much on the internet at all these days.
Okay. How long are you going to be in the U.S. available for discussions on the Tychos model?
I'll be in the U.S. until the end of August.
Okay. So that's an opportunity. So people can contact you two and arrange for any public airings of Tycho if they can get an audience. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. We even had an offer from Gopi. We may go to Utah.
Okay.
We've talked to some places in Arizona where we're really excited about the U.S. Naval Observatory, who's been studying stellar parallax for decades, and they're hoping to they're hoping to get in touch with us. We've designed an experiment for them, basically.
we
basically just
want
to give them this experiment and say, look, just do this. This will prove or disprove the Tychos once and for all. Just do this experiment, please. You don't even have to take new information if you already have this data. And we're very excited to see.
Yeah, well, we explain that we have some friend or a friend who apparently can contact the director there.
The USNO.
And we're only waiting for an answer. But
hopefully they'll not give us a big USNO.
Yeah. USNO.
And how are the book sales? Or the book readings by...
Book sales, huh? Do we have those?
Book sales.
Have you sold like...
few.
20?
Did you get any...
More or less.
Is it print on demand? I know it's a PDF.
It's print on demand for now. We will shop it around to publishers. We've been looking at a few that have been publishing, some astronomer friends who we won't talk about here, that are interesting. And we're certainly open to, a publisher. It's just as it is, we just want to get the information out there as fast as possible. So if someone wants the book, they can certainly order our version. We're quite proud of it.
It's quite nice looking. It's pretty large in format, so because I had all these illustrations, and it looks a bit like a school book of the kind I had when I was in high school. It had to be that large because what I have strived to do is to really show with graphics what the whole system. Is about.
Have you given copies to all the major universities, or can they get it? Can you get it for it?
We don't have enough copies ourselves.
It's not really done, to be honest. What we've explored is going up to universities and saying, "Hey, where does one have material like this reviewed?" Sometimes they just don't have something like that. They'll say, "Look, we have no one here that really specializes in solar system." Other times they'll say, okay, yeah, you can give it to this person, and we'll just get an email saying, go away.
Now that I think about it, yeah, I've been sending to a few selected emails the PDF, of course, but very little response so far. But I will keep doing it because I have a very long list, but I haven't got down to it, really.
We have had a really, really positive response, but... we may have to slowly develop a team. We're considering new Tycho's projects that will hopefully, make it very easy to understand, unlike this radio program.
Well, I'm just a layman trying to dig into it the best I can. Like, I can't call myself an expert in any way.
Well, I hope you got something out of it. Thanks for talking to us.
Absolutely. I'm trying hard, honestly. I'm trying hard to understand it. You guys always get the benefit of the doubt with me.
Since I was interested, sorry, I've been interrupting and asking
all right.
Max, because I wanted to know, he's interested in hearing what astronomers or people in the field have said. What about, did we ever...
Say again? You broke off, Si. Simon? Simon,
can you hear me? I wanted to.
You went away.
Did you hear me?
Yeah, you went away for a second.
Oh, okay.
Oh, we just had a little discussion about talking about someone decided it's not best to do on fakeologists.
Okay.
No, okay, but whenever I get more responses from astronomy people, I will comment about it and on the forum, for instance, and also tell you about it because I think that's you're legitimately interested. As I am, to hear what the first reactions will be from professionals.
Yeah, so for sure.
I promise to you know, take notes and also diffuse whatever they say, probably I'll start writing on the Tycho's Info website about this. So,
well, if they're not interested, who the heck is going to be interested in it? If this is your field of study as an astronomer, for goodness sakes, if someone's unraveling the whole thing, obviously, if you're humble enough to say if they're humble enough to say they're trying to get the best model, what is the problem with admitting that if they're real scientists, that there is a better model?
Let me ask Simon something real quick.
Sure.
Go ahead. The secret meeting is going on. I will try and cut out the pauses. Okay, are you still there?
Okay, yes. Sorry.
Okay.
No.
There is one person that we can tell a slightly dismaying story about. We hope to improve the relationship one day, maybe.
Okay.
It's hard to say if we have to give up or not. So one person that seemed hopeful to us at first was Walter Cruttenden.
He's actually the reason why we went to California.
One of the reasons actually we went to California in the first place was to visit the Binary Research Institute. He's the founder, and I think the Binary Research Institute is pretty much just him. And he has some friends and such, but he's interested in this concept that we might be a binary star system. He was insisting that it was the Sirius system, which is our companion, rather than understanding the configuration. He understands the lunisolar wobble has been disproven. He makes his own arguments for that. So he seemed like a great ally. Well, we tried reaching out, and he just replied very curtly, "Well, my friends at JPL, meaning Jet Propulsion Laboratories, they don't, you know, if you can't make their data work, I don't understand why I should even spend time on it." Okay. So my opinion of what happened here is he became a CEO of a microtransaction app for phones. He spent his time already on the solar system thing, as you say. So this seems topical. He's very interested in it personally, right? And he spent a lot of time trying to get through to others about his opinion. You've seen him at kind of new agey, conventions and things. You've seen interviews with him.
He's written books about it as well.
He's written books.
On Amazon, the thing is, the lost star of myth and time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the thing is, though, I think he's just gotten comfortable. And now that he's finally found the relief that you say we're looking for, he doesn't want anybody to shake that up. He doesn't want anybody to come and say, "Look, you were on the right track before when you were sad and desperate and alone." He wants to just be comfortable and rich now. I mean, he already was, I think, a wealthy guy, but now he's like, you know what I'm saying? So even if we have something with some people, it's just not going to matter. So you say maybe we should search for these kinds of people. I don't want to search for these kinds of people. Simon, you can spend your time on that if you want, but I think it's more valuable to reach out to children, to people who are interested, who are not necessarily entrenched in a lifetime of heartache in it. Yes. That makes sense.
But what Hoy just missed, an important detail of Walter Cruttenden's reply was that, he went to JPL. He actually wrote, "I was at JPL yesterday, and those guys are monitoring 22 satellites right now. And I can't see how your system can, reconciled with the trajectories of their satellites." So you see, Ab, how intertwined this space travel parse is with astronomy. Obviously.
So he's basing his research on fabricated data.
Yeah, I mean, let's say I prefer to think that Walter Cruttenden is quite legitimately, he believes, because he believes in NASA, fine.
Sure.
He believes that they are doing real things. So how, you know, maybe he's completely honest with me, just saying, you know, I can see how your model could work, since those guys at JPL are following 22 satellites.
Yes.
So
he's basing his conclusions on possibly fabricated data because we don't believe.
Can you see the difficulty I'm running up against, you know? I was hoping to have a little, you know, a good ally because he's certainly much more renowned than myself in astronomy circles. Yes, Walter Gratulin has been around for a long time and he's written really good, very good articles, very good research. He's done really good research. Apart from the fact that, as I see it, it is wrong to believe that Sirius, the star Sirius, is the binary companion of the Sun, because Sirius is a binary system in itself. So,
I get it.
You're a freelancer, you know, you're a freelancer for years, and someone says, look, you can do this for a while, or you can join the only game in town.
Yes. The only paying game in town. Make a living.
Yeah. Which is it? He says, well, if there's even a chance that I can finally make something off of this, you know, I don't know if it's money for, I think it might be passion. I think they're exploiting his passion.
Yeah.
Because look, he is wealthy. He has this program that supposedly makes quite a bit of money anyway. His microtransaction thing, I think it's called, I don't know what it's called, Acorn or something.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in what he cared about. And he himself doesn't seem as interested in that anymore.
Yes.
So I suspect that that's...
He was sort of a parallel. He was the closest thing you've seen to binary online, I suppose. And you thought you could at least get enough in common to swing him over. But he has other vested interests, and he based a lot of his research on things that you think are fabricated.
I haven't heard back from university professors that I've reached out to who have said in their biography descriptions and stuff, I am such a rebel here at my university.
Yeah.
You know, I really support weird ideas. We need weird ideas. You know, there's a few eccentric professors here and there that I think would be, if we're lucky enough that they cross over with solar system studies, would be responsive, but it's summer vacation. It's like we came to Arizona during Independence Day week. I mean, I had completely forgotten about that. And so it was just like this absurd, let's just treat this as a kind of vacation here while we're networking.
And it's been good.
It's been nice. It's been very relaxing and very hot. Nice.
Very hot in Arizona.
Yeah, it's hot. It's pretty hot up here too in Toronto. And I think today is the first day my air conditioner actually conked out, so I'm roasting right now. Unfortunately, I'm a little uncomfortable, so I think it's a good time to sign off. I got a lot of information from you, and the only way to really get this information out there is just to keep talking about it. You're talking with a super layman here, so I'm sure everyone listening, or most people listening, are pretty much in the same boat as myself. So I think if we just talk in a way that, yes, go ahead.
Why don't you tell him the story of the bus driver? So you have a counterexample. It's funny.
Well, yeah,
you had a genius bus driver in Phoenix?
Yeah, not in Phoenix. Just as I arrived in the States, I landed in Chicago.
Chicago, yeah.
And then because it was the cheapest fare from Italy, from Rome, so then in Chicago. But then I had to take this Greyhound bus
mega bus,
to Minneapolis. So I came just in time and jumped in on this bus, and it was there was a lady driver. The bus driver was a lady. Very cheerful woman, and when we stopped at some to have some, you know, this to have a coffee, we started talking. She said, "Where are you from?" "I'm from Italy." "Oh, what are you doing?" And very, very quickly, she said, "What you have done? You're done an astronomy research. I am really, really passionate about astronomy. Tell me about it."
Wow.
So we spent the whole trip, whenever she had an occasion to talk, you know, we talked at all, every stop we made at the various, you know, bars and for for Paul, she had really good questions. She was very well versed in astronomy, and it was just so funny. You know, the first person I meet when landing in the States was this astronomical bus driver, and I felt it was so funny, almost surreal.
Synchronistic, I guess. Not coincidental.
Wasn't it that you said something about Copernicus, and she goes, "Ah, I always had some suspicion about that."
Yeah. Like, and she was very much. She was quite a conspiracy theorist, you know. Wasn't Kepler killed? You know, apparently, Kepler wasn't. Tycho Brahe killed because she had heard about there is this conspiracy about Kepler apparently poisoned his master. Because he was interested in taking his observations, and that's what he did, actually. What happened after Brahe died suddenly, because he was a sudden death, really.
Yes.
Kepler took all his observations and, you know, turned them upside down, really, because Tycho had this other model, and Kepler used it for his Copernican theory. And became the astronomer royal in took over from Tycho Brahe's post as astronomer royal in Prague. So it was really, there were some there could have been, you know, probable motives for Kepler to have killed his master. Oh. But I don't go there in the book. I don't want to go there. I've done enough conspiracy research in my life. Mm-hmm. But there has been a full book written about this. I think it's a couple, husband and wife who have done a long research, pretty detailed research, and they reckon that Kepler killed Tycho Brahe.
Yes.
Because, you know, to take over his observations, his lifetime work, and his post as astronomer royal.
Yes, I don't know. I've heard the stories, though. Maybe that's conspiracy candy and just to deflect, distract.
So, you know, I don't go there. As I said, it's just I thought we had mentioned it here, just for to show that I've read that myself too. Mm-hmm. It's not that I support the idea, but it is plausible because Kepler became, you know, universally famous after that. Mm-hmm. So,
can we let Kay have a closing remark? Kay, you're still there?
Hello, Ab. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Kay.
Hello.
Hi, Kay.
Hi, Kay. See you soon.
Yes.
So excited.
I am. So the closing remarks will be to advertise again, because I don't think we can say it enough. Mm-hmm. So we're advertising for a couple things. First, for the Hilton in Minneapolis.
There's like three in the area, so look for the one that is associated with the Alcon site. I got confused. There's like...
Yeah.
Three what?
There's like three Hiltons. Or like Hilton. If you search Hilton in Google, it showed three locations, and I was like confused.
But okay.
It's one that's like a couple blocks from the light rail stop.
Okay. Good to...
Yeah, so you can find the Tycho's and Simon Jack and Matt Hoy Polloy in the vendor area, as well as at different presentations. So go to the vendor area if you show up July 11th through the 14th. That's Wednesday through Saturday?
Wednesday, Saturday, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're also advertising the second event at University of Michigan. And what were those?
Minnesota.
States?
Minnesota.
I'm sorry, Minnesota. University. Minnesota, and then
don't go to Michigan. We won't be there.
Michigan's closer
maybe
to
we'll
me.
Be there, but
yeah, Michigan's closer to me.
But August 23rd will be in Minnesota.
Okay, yeah, so exciting! I can't wait.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. All right, guys. Well, thanks very much, and I'll be posting this shortly, and definitely. Maybe we'll have a check-in somehow on the audio chat or somewhere where we can just get an update on how things are going and some of the reaction to this. That would be most interesting. And if you have a recording device, it would be good to get maybe some basic reaction for some people that are
All right, certainly.
Closer to researching this than most people here?
Let's see if we can't. We'll have internet. We're going to use it to try to sell a book or two.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll also have time to just dial in, you know. It's a long convention. 4 days.
Yeah,
so
yeah. We'll have time to do stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be. Yeah.
Yes. One audible gasp. That's what I'm hoping for, Simon.
What's that?
One audible gasp.
One audible gasp when from someone as they start learning about the news. Because I was like,
oh okay.
Someone, you know, highly impressed. Blown away.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of those.
We've had a couple of those already, yeah.
Yeah. They're fun. They're fun to get.
Yeah.
All right, we'll close it out with one of Simon's best tracks, Wonderful Fool, from the September Clues soundtrack. That's still many people here's favorite movie and favorite soundtrack, and I guess you'll never be able to get rid of that, Simon. That's definitely around here, your pièce de résistance, but maybe this Tycho's Expo, maybe this Tycho's revelation will be even bigger, as you say.
Let's see. Let's wait and see.
All right, thanks, Ev. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Have a wonderful
thanks to you.
Rest of your summer.
No, thank you. We'll be in touch. All right, take care, guys.
And then I witnessed both towers collapse, one first and then the second, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense.
Some people said they saw a missile. I don't know how people could differentiate, but we might keep open the possibility that this was a missile attack on these buildings.
So wonderful, wonderful, wonderful world.
Wow. 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 W